Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Showman Tyler Show and UFO Undercover. I hope everybody's having a great morning, great evening, great afternoon, wherever you're on a big, beautiful blue planet. You know, I say this every Wednesday. There's nowhere else I'd want to be on Wednesdays but here. I enjoy doing a show every week. I have a lot of fun. It's always entertaining, and it's usually fairly informative, depending on who we have on. Tonight's going to be a little different. Last night, I was on Solaris Blue Haven show, Hyperspace on the Dark Matter Radio Network. I'm actually going to be playing that interview for y'all tonight. It's a really good interview. It's about 2 hours long. It's about the normal width of a show. Lots and lots of good material in there. We discussed the Greys, the Reptilians, Betty and Barney Hill, the Roswell slides, a couple other things besides that in there, a couple of types of abductions, some ancient history. It's a smorgasbord of a show. It's really, really good. Solaris did a great job in an interview last night. It was a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun doing the interview. So instead of rambling on, I will play that for you shortly, and I hope you all enjoy it. Might come back and see y'all at the break just to chit-chat a few minutes, and then we'll queue up the rest. So see y'all in about an hour.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Hyperspace on the Dark Matter Radio Network. I'm your host, Solaris Blue Raven. I want to thank everybody for tuning in this evening, and a special thank you to webmaster and producer Keith Rowland. And my special guest this evening is Joe Montaldo. And Joe is the co-founder of ICAR, International Community for Alien Research. He is 25 years abduction researcher. Hear a little feedback there. He's a contactee. And Joe is also the host of UFO Undercover Radio. And his website is www.icar1.com. And I hear a feedback there, but please welcome Joe to the show this evening. Hello.
Hello. How are you doing tonight? Great to be with you. It's been a while since I talked to you.
Oh, gosh. It's been way too long, and I'm so happy to have you on tonight. So welcome.
Well, thank you. I love hanging out, you know, and it's one of my favorite subjects to talk about. I get to talk about a lot of stuff these days, so I'm always happy when I get to talk about something I like.
No, I'm so glad you're on. Well, let's get started. Let everybody know what you've been up to. What's going on in your orbit as of recent?
Well, right now, actually, there's quite a lot of stuff going on. ICAR is actually in a middle of what I guess you would call a reboot in today's language. We've been getting rid of some old directors, bringing in some new directors, changing some stuff around. But it's hard for us because nowadays we have so many members and so many abduction cases on file that it gets a little weird. Mm-hmm. It gets complicated because for me, I'll get like 100, 150, 200 cases, which is too much for one person. Mm-hmm. But more importantly than that, I was on one of the abduction. It's abduction at AT&T.net if you want to write to it. It's one of many accounts we have. The other day I was in there, there's 577 abduction cases that have not even been opened yet.
Wow.
They have not even been opened. They're going back 4 months. So if anybody wants to volunteer for work at ICAR, but you got to sign a non-disclosure agreement. Sorry, guys. We got to keep people's stuff safe. Some of the other accounts have more. Some of the other accounts have less. But there's always a bunch because we're always backlogged 4, 5, 6 months.
Amazing.
And you got to be real careful because we've learned over the years that some directors, or some people, I should say, are not in this for the right reasons. Usually because they're looking to get famous, which I'm not sure how you think you can get famous in ufology, or to make some money, which you can make a little money in ufology, but I wouldn't quit my day job. I mean, some people do. It's just, when I was offered the first time the tour in ufology, and I got to add up how many conferences they were and how much they paid me, which was about $800 a set, which is probably not as much as other people make, but there's no way. What I make right now is just way, way more than that. So I was kind of like, no, I can't just be taking off endless amounts of time to do this, and this is the compensation you get. It's just not worth it to me financially. And I got to say, after you attended a few 50, 80 conferences, it's all pretty much the same stuff. There's really nothing new added to ufology in over a decade. And the abduction research is always great, but it's not something that you really see at conferences. There's a few that do it, but for the most part, it's taboo. How can it be taboo is beyond me, because it's ufology, but it is taboo. Of course, you know, we had the Roswell slides, which I'm working on. That's another thing that's going on in the middle of right now. I had several of our hosts, several of our members in the organization, and some close friends write to me about the Roswell slides and ask me what my take was on them. And I said, well, I think they're not – I don't think they're what you think they are. Mm-hmm. I said, but I haven't had time – you know, I haven't had time to sit down and review them, go through all the information. You know, and I know Hami Masson. I've interviewed him and talked to Hami many, many times. I know Richard Dolan. I've interviewed him and talked to him many, many times. Quite a few of the other people who were speaking. So I told him, before you go jumping the gun, give these guys the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they got taken for a ride. Mm-hmm. Or was it intentional? But anyway, we're in the middle of working on that right now. And like I said, ICAR's in the middle of a reboot. The station is actually basically in the middle of a reboot too. We've been dividing the two. And I hate to say it like this, but ufology and paranormal just doesn't pay. You know, I had the UFO Paranormal Radio Network for about 10 years, which its ratings are great. I mean, if you type in UFO radio anyway, we're usually number one. But the thing about it is there's not any money from it. Get this, Alaris. The first year I had United Public Radio and brought on news radio programs and other talk radio, it paid for itself. First year.
Wow.
So it's just a difference. People are willing to give money on stuff like that, which is, you know, to me is I call it hate radio, because when you do news, half the news is hate news. But it's what people are willing to pay for. The other ones, they like that we have it on the station, and they like the current mix now, but they're not willing to give you money for them. But other people are willing to pay for advertisement. And the show I do on Saturdays, which is a 4-hour show, it's news and satire. So people really like it, because we do all the current stuff daily, you know, for that entire week. And then we put our takes on it. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad, sometimes it's just freaking hilarious is what it is. But
yeah, you have to laugh or you're going to cry or scream.
Well, you know, because I'm not a conservative or a liberal. Mm-hmm. I tend to tick a lot of people off. But even in the ufology world, I'm not kidding you. And this guy writes to me, said, you have to be one of the most brilliant ufologists I've ever met. He said, but you're a complete and utter moron when it comes to politics. That's exactly how he wrote to me. I'm like, really, dude? I said, how can I be brilliant one and completely ignorant the other one? I'm just not buying it. But we have a lot of fun. We have a lot of fun, and we've been tracking a lot of cases lately. It hasn't been as busy as usual. 2015 has been – I mean, we still got a steady caseload coming in pretty much weekly. But, you know, we don't do as much sighting work as we used to. We kind of stray away unless it's really, really good stuff. And, you know, like the place I bought on the coast is in a hot zone. I mean, it's right smack in the middle of a hot zone. Some of the wild stuff that's happened to me and other people I know has happened right there. The account of the two state troopers watching the thing come out the water happened right there. The one where my son said, oh, my bug friends are back to visit, and came out the water, it happened right there. It's a really, really – and it's so strange. It tells you how the universe works, though. You know, I own a construction company. That's what I do in the daytime. I own maintenance solutions. So one of my customers calls me up. He said, I got a house on the coast on one of the bayous, and he said, I need some renovation work done inside. So I said, all right, I'll go take a look. I drive up there. I get in the house. House has been completely remodeled. Beautiful house. 3-bedroom, 2 baths, 20 feet off the ground with 16-foot ceilings. Just stunningly gorgeous. Its own private boat launch, its own private dock going right out into the bayou, goes right out into the Gulf. So I'm like, just a beautiful place. Need a little work outside, but not much. So I called him up and said, dude, what do you want me to do? There's nothing wrong with the house. Oh, yeah, it hasn't been remodeled. I said, no, it's been remodeled, Katrina. So he calls up one of his relatives. They originally put the house on the market for $330, and it sat there for about a year, or a couple of years, 2 years. And then it went down to $220, and someone bought it. They found termites in it. So they put it back, gave it back to the owners, and they put it back on the market. So here comes Joe. He said, well, look, why don't you do the work outside, and I'll let you use it as a fish camp for on the weekends. And he said, just give me $500 a month. And I said, I'll give you the first 4 months free while you're doing the work, and just give me $500 a month for as long as you want to keep it. I said, you can't even touch something on the Gulf Coast for $500 a month, not something like this. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could rent it out weekly for probably $2,500 a month. I could easily rent it out for $3,000-$4,000 monthly. So I'm like, okay. So calls me up one day. He said, you know, I like you. You've been working for me a long time. He said, do you want to buy the house? I said, y'all want a little bit for the house and the extra lives. I'm not thinking. I said, I just don't feel like I'm going to get into that date. Well, right at that time, I cut the deal with Community Coffee for the Joe Montaldo show. So I was like, wow, well, this can really help. So he calls me up. Like 2 days later, he goes, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll give you the house at 135, including the lot, and I'll finance the house for you at 5% at 746 for, I think it was 25 years. How can you say no to that?
No kidding.
You know, so I'm like, well, hell yeah, I want the house. And so, and it just happened to be in one of the hottest zones that we deal with. And more importantly than that, 60 feet from the house when I was 3 years old in Hurricane Camille, our car got swept away by a wave right in front of the bridge where I live now. Got swept away, and it got hung up on a chain link fence. And my dad had to put me and my mom on top of the car while he swam in the middle of Hurricane Betsy to get help. I was only three at the time. So I'll tell you what I remember. I remember seeing the white Cadillac. I remember seeing water rushing the car. I remember seeing the brown water with the white light, you know, from the car inside glowing inside the water. And I remember standing on the car. And then I remember some guy picking me up. And next thing I knew, I woke up at a house with cartoons on the TV. It was a very strange, but it's so weird that the house is right there.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the only house that survived Katrina in the whole neighborhood. There was three next to it that got completely leveled. Two down the street from it got completely leveled. All the rest around them got completely – it was the only house left standing. I was like – and that's the reason I got it the way I did. I was like, well, the house is – you know, it's been through Betsy, Camille, and now Katrina. I said, yeah, definitely. It's a great house.
Good mojo.
Yeah, so it's really nice. It's great, beautiful skies at night for sky watching. We're like I said, we're about 150 yards from two of the hottest sightings on the Gulf Coast, and then about another quarter mile from about another dozen really faded. Matter of fact, the one I had that was on the Sci-Fi Channel on what's his name show was about 4 miles down the road from there where I filmed that thing over the Gulf for 20 minutes. It's just a very hot zone, and no one ever thinks of Mississippi as being a hot zone. We do a lot of Gulf Breeze stuff, and a lot of Navarre, a lot of Gray Beach, a lot of Panama City, Mary Esther, a lot of the Gulf Coast down there. Almost all the Gulf Coast is a hot zone, but you never hear anybody talk about Mississippi.
No.
You know, but there's a lot of sightings going on, and you get really good witnesses. We've had Air Force pilots, we've had Navy pilots, we've had state troopers. It's just a better caliber witness all the way around because of what's on the Gulf Coast. You got Keesler Air Force bases right here. You got the CV space right here. You got two NASA facilities. You got one of the largest NASA facilities in the world, 20 minutes from where I live, which has just been a mecca for hot stuff. That's where we caught the Grays on film. That's where they heard there was six of us. We went to go test an experiment one night. You know, we learned a long time ago with the Grays, because the Grays like to come in threes, but a lot of times they're dealing with a contactee individually. We learned really advanced contactees can actually block a single Gray. It takes three or four, but they can actually block a single Gray. So we were out there just screwing around trying this. There was six of us. Well, there's a videotape shooting at the sky because there was a meteor shower that night. So we had a videotape going. So you can hear the entire conversations, what's going on, everything. So you hear the three people up by the road, they're talking. They have not a clue what's going on. You hear us talking down the road, and you can hear it, make out what we're saying about the Grays and stuff. And then while all this was going on, we had finally said, all right, we're going to try it. We got the Gray to stop. It just kind of froze there. And then next thing you know, there's two more.
Sure.
And you weren't stopping them two. So as we're walking backwards, because we're all kind of walking back away from them at this point, you hear the other three as they turn around and see what the hell's going on. It is just – it's kind of funny when you listen to them because I can't use the language they used.
Wow. So you're saying actually they're physically – I mean they actually show up in a physical matrix?
Oh, yeah. And we've brought people out there to see them before. Not just there. We've a couple of places you can go that you can actually – if you've got the right guide or it's the right time of year, you can personally see them. We took 18 people to Navarre Beach, Florida. In a fog so thick, you're lucky you could see the bumper. We got lost for 20 hours in a fog. Yeah, y'all believe that.
Mm-hmm.
While we're walking on the beach, we broke up into a pack of guys and girls, right? So up about 15 feet in front of us, you can hear the girls talking, but you couldn't see them because of the fog. And I forgot who it was, Mike. You know, and this was right after Katrina, so we had a lot of people in town working for me that were, you know, from listeners to the radio show, but people that come down to hell for Katrina from all around the country, including Canada. So they all came down and were walking. I think it was Canuck said, Joe, what are them little footprints? I said, what do you mean, little? He said, look, there's little footprints popping up in front of us. I'm like, you're crazy, dude. I said, what are you smoking? He said, no, really, look. So I hit the guy next to me, which is Mike. He looks and he says, yeah, there is. So we hear, and then all of a sudden you hear the girl stop and start kind of chattering like they were a little scared or something. And so I'm hollering at them. I said, do y'all see anything? And they turned around, started walking back to us. We started turning around. You know, I mean, we kept walking towards them. So, we met in the middle of the fog. You could see a figure, but you couldn't tell what it was. And then you see the little footprints, and they go off towards the water. So we're like, well, I don't know what the hell it was. Of course, everybody knew it was a gray, but for the sake of argument, nobody knew what it was. So we make it to the gazebo next to Keith's Eglin Air Force Base. Now, we filmed some pretty hairy stuff down there by Eglin, but we're all sitting in this gazebo, and it's next to the military facility on a national park right against the Gulf of Mexico. So we're sitting there, and I hear Canuck go, what the bleep, 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 bleep? And I look up, and I seen Kelly and I think it was Kelly or Linda or one or two of them just jumped up and jumped back. There was a gray coming down the pole. They had these rope-wrapped poles. You know, they were inside the gazebo, and they were wrapped with an old ship rope. It was actually coming down the rope. So it came down. It kind of stood up, looked around at us, turned around, walked down the hallways towards the bathroom. You see him, what looked to be like a white light in the sidewalk, and he was gone. There was 18 witnesses to this.
Wow.
10 of these people had never even met me before until like 2 days earlier or 4 days earlier. So it was definitely startling. Later that night, we're down in what they call Blue Mountain Beach, and still it's foggy as hell. We get out the truck and in the car, because we were packed in like sardines. We go walk out on this beach, it's a beautiful beach. We get out there, and we get in a big circle. And as we were starting to circle, we noticed that the clouds above us were separating. So as big as the circle was around, was you could see open sky above us. The fog had subsided away from atop of us and left open sky. But it was still completely foggy all around us. And every now and then you'd hear this weird sound. It sounded like a dolphin clicking, but outside the water, and you'd feel something touch you. And then it would move on, which was freaking everybody out.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're standing there looking, and then all of a sudden you see something. It's like a shadow. And then it's just standing there in the middle of a circle. It looked like a 7-foot gray, or blue, whatever you want to call them. But it wasn't one of the little short ones. It was one of the taller ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I still remember Tina going, it's smiling at us. I'm like, well, I don't know if I'd call that a smile or not. I'm not sure what the hell I'd call that. And then the next thing I know, we're driving along, and we're halfway back to New Orleans. Everybody was just kind of, huh? Just like, what the hell just happened? Because it was no really denying what we seen. Nobody was drunk. Everybody was sober. It was just a big group of people down there, and we seen the entire event for what it was. It was just such a strange thing to happen. Somebody said, well, were y'all hallucinating? I said, well, all 18 of us would have been hallucinating then. And we've got pictures of the sky opened up above us. You can see the fog completely around us. Matter of fact, when you're taking pictures across the circle, you can't really see the person standing on the other side of the circle. When you take aim the camera up, you can see the complete circle of the sky above us. It was just a really, really, really thing. And then somebody had noticed when we were driving back that a good part of the ride back, the sky had been staying open.
Mm-hmm.
It was a surreal kind of event. But all together now, we've probably brought 100, 150 people along the Gulf Coast who have had up-close and personal experiences. And I tell people all the time, I said, if you come down here, you might have an experience, you might not. I said, but be prepared if you do. Because, you know, my French director was in, and we were doing hypnosis sessions, 3 hours sessions at a time, long, hard sessions because she was having reptilian contact. Well, we didn't know at the time, but later on through the regressions we found out. But we took her out to a little place. It's called Irish Bayou. It's in the middle of nowhere. It's in the middle of a swamp. There's alligators all over the place. And it's just a little park out there. But there's been a lot of heavy-duty sightings out there. So we went out there. We were just hanging out watching the sky. And had a little, like, I would call it a time glimpse. It was like 8:08. And then when we left, it was 8:08. We were out there like 40 minutes. So I mean, kind of, all right. So anyway, next day, we're doing hypnosis session. And in the middle of session, I said, I'm not going to say her name, but I said, last night when we were out at Irish Bayou, did you sense anything? Man, she just goes off. It's all on videotape, but she just goes off about being in this underground tunnel with these reptilians escorting her down to another place. It was just wild listening to her. But it would fit into the type of time things, because, you know, there's really not missing time with aliens anymore. They've gotten a little smarter than that. That's why a lot of times when I hear these rookies investigate, and they say, oh, well, they got missing time. I said, well, you're probably being messed with by the government then. I said, well, the aliens learned two things. One, there's no need for missing time, because somehow or another they figured out how to remove you and put you back roughly around the same time. But more importantly than that, and ICAR broke both of these, by the way. These were both things that the organization broke and brought into ufology. We also found out that they don't do cover memories anymore.
No screen memories. Okay.
Yeah. What they do is they do looped memories. They'll take something from your head, something that you do, something mundane, something that you do all the time, whether it's driving to work, picking up a kid, walking the dog, something you're not going to question. Mm-hmm. And the way these got busted was, there was a couple of them, because, man, all of a sudden, like 96, 97, we just weren't getting any missing time cases. 95, I was like, what the hell is going on here? And there was a case, well, the very first case was a pregnant lady. She used to drive to work every day, and on the way to work, she'd stop and get a hot dog, okay? So she had the baby, and she's going to work one day, and she calls me. She goes, Joe, I stopped and got a hot dog for breakfast this morning. I said, well, you're not pregnant anymore. You're still craving them nasty hot dogs. She said, better than that, they closed the hot dog stand a month ago. So here she has a full memory of going to this hot dog stand and then going to work after it, but it doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, wow.
So you're like, what? So we regressed her, and we found out that's exactly what it was. It was a looped memory. And then in more – and there's always stuff behind it if you really dig, but most people won't look because there's nothing to look for. You're like, well, no, that's what I did. One of the better cases was, this was in Gulf Breeze, Florida. Couple goes down to Gulf Breeze, Florida. This is a well-documented case, too, by the way, really well-documented. So they go down to Gulf Breeze, Florida, right? They check into their hotel. They decide they're going to go out to the beach for a while. It's beautiful. You know, Pensacola, Gulf Breeze is gorgeous down there. Night skies are fabulous. So they're going to go out. So they leave the hotel at 10 minutes to 11. They get in their car. They leave the hotel. The camera has them leaving the hotel at 10 minutes to 11. They stop at the local convenience store, which is about two blocks away. It's shift change. It's a couple minutes before 11 in the middle of shift change. They talk to the four clerks that are on duty, because Florida has a law. You have to have two clerks working at night. So they talk to them. They notice it was 11 o'clock. So they get in the car. They drive down to where they parked on the beach. So they park the car on the beach. They go out, and they go out on the beach, which they have really weird stuff happen on the beach that night. But what's even stranger, they come back and they get in the car. They're driving back home 2 days later. They find a parking ticket in between the seats of the car. Someone had stuck it down, you know, they had one of those middle consoles. So the ticket was stuck there. So they pulled the ticket out, and they were issued a parking ticket at 10.05 p.m. at this spot. Now, remember, the hotel and the shift change people have them there at 11 o'clock. Mm-hmm. When we checked the cameras at the hotel, at 10 o'clock, their car was still in the parking lot of the hotel. So somehow or another, some cop, and we talked to the cop, he said the car was there at 10.05. We talked to the dispatcher, she said it was called in at 10.03. And so we've documented it. The ticket says 10.05, and there's no time change in Pensacola. It's the same central time. Mm-hmm. So,
wow.
You know, so now we have this, and we're like, well, what the hell went on here? How can there be an hour's difference? I mean, really, I mean, it's such a clear case. I mean, you got them. You see them leaving the hotel at 10 minutes after. Yeah, and the girl actually told me at the convenience store, she'd give me the video, but they gave audio testimony, so they didn't have to. They remembered seeing the couple. This was like 6 weeks later, I went and talked to them. They remembered seeing them because they were talking about UFOs. They were going sky watching. Mm-hmm. So it left an impression on the clerk, so they remembered them. And she said, oh, no, our shift change is straight up 11 o'clock. That's when we changed shift, and that's when they were here. So we knew they were in the store. Now, where they went down the beach is only like a minute away. It's like, I don't know, 800 yards or maybe a quarter mile. So they parked the car. So somehow or another, if the cop would have miswrote the ticket, he would have wrote the ticket for 11.05 if it was an accident, but they would have seen him because it takes about 8 minutes to get to the water from the car. So they would have seen the cop pull up, and the cop would have seen them. Now, get this. The cop said, when I interviewed him, and I got this on audio, when I interviewed him, he said, the car was there, the hood was cold, he walked out on the beach, and there was no one to be seen for miles in either direction. He said he even walked down the beach a little ways, because he didn't want to write him a ticket, because it was an out-of-state tag. He was just going to say, hey, why don't you move your car, and don't worry about it. But he couldn't find him.
Wow.
So now you've got a couple with a cop looking for him that can't be found, but yet according to the video, they're in the hotel at the time this cop writes the ticket. And with the dispatcher and the audio clip, and even – and what's great about it, on the dispatches, it has a – I forgot what they call it, but when they call in, it does an audio thing. It'll say like 10:05 p.m. such and such date.
Mm-hmm.
It actually has a key. So she played that back for me. They're reading the license number on the car. She played it back, so it's obviously the right car. I'm like, well, how in the hell could this have possibly happened? So there had to be something to do with time. I mean, there's no other way this could have happened.
Yeah.
So what it really looks like is somehow or another they picked him up and put him back with an hour's difference, but they managed to put him back without anybody noticing. So they picked him up pre-hotel is what they did. Did all their stuff and then put them back at this time. They probably put the car back at 10:05. And we're like, well, there's no way. How in the hell does something like this work? But we knew right then and there that the memories in their head were false.
Right.
Because there's no way when you're out there at 11 o'clock and people know you're out there, but you've got a ticket and documented at 10, you got to wonder what the hell happened here. And it's just those are the kind of things that started busting these things open for us. We got enough of these kind of things, like the pregnant lady. This woman cracks me up. She calls me one day. She's from New York City. She calls me up and she's, you know, telling me she's pregnant. She was 9 months pregnant when she had this weird experience. Well, she's talking about, you know, her pregnancy and blah, 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 and she's getting ready to have the baby and blah, blah, blah. And she starts talking about it. She said, so I'm driving along, and she said, I'm not exactly sure what happens. She said, next morning I get up, and I'm not pregnant. I'm like, what do you mean you're not pregnant? You're 9 months pregnant. She said, I wasn't pregnant. I said, that doesn't even matter. I said, were you dreaming you weren't pregnant? She said, no, I wasn't pregnant. So I even went to the doctor. She said, here, I'll send you the thing. 3 days later, she's pregnant again. And we're talking like she was 3 or 4 months pregnant. So this wasn't just like there wasn't no showing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And she sent me the doctor's report. Even the doctor was freaked out. The doctor said, well, maybe it was some kind of false negative. But she's got a picture of her with her belly. I think it was like almost 4 months. In a picture when she came back from the doctor, and her belly was flat. And I'm like, it's just, but then it was back.
Wow.
And you'd be one thing if they were just telling you this. You could say, okay, well, they're full of you know what.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have documents from doctors and police officers and pilots and stuff, it's hard not to take it serious.
Oh, yeah.
And so we realized, so when we found out that these were covered or looped memories, we would actually go in and break the memory and find out what was behind it. But a lot of times I'll get like the one guy said, he lives in I think it's Carlsbad, New Mexico. He drives between there and Roswell, cause he works in Roswell. He said, I'm driving back and forth. I think he says about 2 hour drive and he's driving back and forth. And he says it's just basically desert and fences and some military ranges and some other stuff. And he said, there's a particular gate out there with some stuff on it. And he said, I'm driving by. He said, I see this every day. He said, well, the other day I get home, and I'm thinking, wow, I've seen that they used to have this gate that had been painted in a bunch of colors. And he said, wow, I've seen that, and I hadn't seen that in a while. So he got back in his car and drove back. It wasn't there. The last time the gate had actually been there was 6 months earlier. We checked that with the U.S. Air Force. It was he described it as a rainbow gate. Actually, what it was a warning gate for chemical and biological weapons testing area.
Mm.
And they had taken it down because it had closed the area. Mm-hmm. So I was like, what the kind of cases are these? And
right.
So, like I said, we couldn't find him. So in his case, I said, well, look, you know what? I said, I got a friend in your area who's really good at hypnosis. I said, why don't you let him put you under and just recall it? Remember, so they go through it, and, you know, he said, oh, yeah, I'm just driving along, and there's nothing. And he said, okay. He said, now you ended the trip. He said, let's go back to the middle of the trip where the gate would be. And he said, I want you to stop. We're going to go down 2 more levels or maybe 3 more levels. They got down, and, of course, he found out he had been abducted. Mm-hmm. He had been taken. The memories were still intact, but with the surface memory going, see, your mind and other people just won't question those memories. You know, you're not – even like the people with the car, they're not going to question it. They got a ticket at 10:05. They're going to be like, oh, the cop must have just wrote it. It was just my nosy butt that wanted to know why. Because once they told me about the girls at the convenience store, I knew because I've been in that store myself before. I knew shift change was at 11 o'clock. I was like, okay, something's not – 2 and 2 is not making 4 here. So we got into it. And because of those things, that's what led us to find out about, looped memories and really a lack of what we would consider cover memories today. It just there's, and it makes sense to me because the government still uses cover memories, but E.T., we figured out what happened was is E.T. got wise to all the researchers in the field. They're saying, okay, they're tracking us by missing time. That's how they know these are real cases because there's missing time. Let's just do away with the missing time. Mm-hmm. And since they have all these memories, we will just, instead of letting them go looking for memories, we will take the need away to look for memories by using real memories, real physical memories that they put in your head, and they're there. And you just don't question them because it's something you do all the time. It's just every now and then they make a boo-boo.
Mm-hmm. Slip up.
Yeah, they don't know that this closed or this road's not working. There was one case, the guy took Interstate 20 to work every day. Well, they were doing work on it, so he was going a different route, some highway route. Well, when he had his experience, when he got up and got back, he remembered driving down Highway 20 and the section, of course, was closed. So there was no way he was there. So we knew right then and there something had happened to him. But without those little glitches, it's hard to find. So we're still consigned to seeing if anything manifests in people's dreams. And I'm so leery when people call me and tell me they remember everything. I have never met a contactee to date that can remember everything.
Mm-hmm.
First off, I think it's a physical impossibility. But to put it like this, most contactees are lifelong contactees. So let's say you started getting abducted at 10. We're going to say that for and they abducted you once a week, say 4 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's 50. That's 200 hours a year. Well, you might be able to remember 200 things. Well, every 10 years, that's 2,000. 30 years down the road, that's 6,000 hours of memory. You get 6,000 hours of memory? Nobody does.
Right.
So that's the real problem here. You know, all these people say, oh, the aliens are this, the alien. Well, you don't know that because you've got maybe, if you're lucky, 10% of what's going on, maybe 20 if you're gifted.
Right.
But you're not really getting any more than that. Mm-hmm. One, and the main reason is, I don't even think it's because the aliens don't want you to know it. I don't think that the human brain can actually handle and store that much information. I think when you're on board the ships, it's a little different because you have access to the onboard systems,
mm-hmm.
Where you can store your brain is allowed to tap, I guess, their onboard computers,
mm-hmm.
and if that's what they call them, and you can kind of cross share information.
Is that through like artificial intelligence interface or something?
Yeah, it's like, you know how you got a hard drive that's an exterior hard drive for your computers. It's basically the same thing. Your brain is basically the exterior hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
It allows you to access and store information. It's so that the people up there for training missions or whatever can retain the information, not bring it back to Earth, but when they need it, it's on board the ship.
Mm-hmm.
So when they're functioning on board, they're actually tapped into the system. So they're probably on a magnitude 8 or 9 times smarter than they are here,
mm-hmm.
Because they are tapped in the system. But when they're sent back, information's left there and not here. And that's why sometimes you get contact and say, well, I feel empty. Well, yeah, because you're dummy now compared to what you were a little while ago.
Erasers? I mean, have you heard of that where they just erase?
They do. If you can't handle it or you can't work for the system, they'll just wipe it. Because people tell me all the time, well, I can stop my – nobody can stop a contact, okay? Only people can stop a contact is the aliens, and the only time they stop a contact is if you're not useful anymore.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing you can personally do to make them stop. You can't invoke the name of Christ. You can't beat them up. You can't scream at them. There's nothing you can do to intimidate a gray, a reptilian, or a human. There's nothing on this planet, anybody alive today, that has that ability. They're not going to be intimidated by us. So they're going to do what they want, when they want, and how they want. So if you can't accept that and understand that, then of course they're either going to block it out, or because if you're still useful, like if they're doing it for your children or something else, because sometimes parents' contact will stop when their children reach a certain age,
mm-hmm.
Because they become more useful.
Right.
But that's another thing that people have to deal with. You know, a lot of times I was talking to a couple the other day, and she goes, and she said, F you, Joe, I never thought about my kids being taken. She's got 5 kids,
mm-hmm.
ranging from age 3 to, I think, age 15. And she said, now I'm just mad. I said, well, you should be. I said, did Mr. Gray call you up and say, hey, Sarah, can I take your kids for a trip this weekend? And said, no, hell no, he didn't. But he just come and gone. But the other weird part is his kids, for the most part, don't have fears of them.
Interesting. So maybe it's not a negative experience.
I don't think it's as much. Every now and then I'll hear a kid that has some fear. But like a lot of the kids, just like my son and them, they my little bug-eyed friends, my little friend, this friend, my reptilian friend, but they call them friend. So apparently they're not harsh to them. As best we can tell, around puberty up until around age 28 seems to be when all the really nasty stuff goes on.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the stuff that you don't want to remember happens in that time frame. Because that's when they're doing like breeding experiments, emotional experience. How far can they push your psychological and physical self? That's when they usually do those kind of experiments. And that's when our brain and body can probably handle it the best.
Right.
But, you know, I tell contactees all the time because I want to remember. I'm like, why do you want to remember that? I said, there's lots of stuff you might want to remember, but why you want to remember that is beyond me. I mean, they block it out for a reason, because for most humans, it's considered quite intrusive and quite scary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the milking machines and stuff like that. It's just a very intrusive all the way around, and sometimes it's just best to forget it. It's not that there's not good contact. There is. And for the most part, you can't really define contact as good or evil, because frankly, I don't think they have the concept like we do. I don't think the reptilians, greys, or humans really view the universe in the good and evil way that we view it. I think they view it in a much grayer view.
Mm-hmm.
Or they wouldn't abduct people without asking them.
Right.
You know, because they think what they're doing is fine. They don't have – but, you know, in all fairness, in all defense of them, we abduct animals on the planet every day.
Right.
We dart them from helicopters. Can you imagine? You could be this. You're running down the field. Some guy in a helicopter there shoots you in the ass with a dart. Oops, sorry about that laser music where that word. And you fall down. They come up, hook you up to scale, weigh you, stick a bunch of needles in. You clip your ear, big tag on your ear, and then cut you loose. Yeah, you just been probed, man. What are you talking about?
That's true.
So, I mean, they're not really doing anything that we don't do ourselves. It's just we consider ourselves a higher species, and maybe they don't. Maybe they consider us like we consider the dolphins. Very intelligent, but maybe not. Yeah, well, you know, if a couple kill, what's the big deal?
Well, let me ask you real quick, Joe, and I just love letting you roll here because you have so much information. But what do you think the difference is, or is there between these abductions? Are they my lab versus off world? Is there a blend? Is it a mix when these people are being taken? Is it the underground that's pulling them in with military abductions?
Well, actually, it's a good question, because what you get is usually first off, the military are – I hate to use military because it's not per se our Pentagon military. There are military people involved, but it's not our military. And it's U.S. people and some foreign people, but it's not – it's more like a special interest group is really what it is. But first they have to find out that you're a contactee. How do they know? I mean, they just can't tell that everybody's a contactee, so they have to find out first. That's why I tell people it's dangerous when you become public, especially if you're someone like – Katarina Wilson or Jim Sparks, anybody with advanced information, if you come out and start talking about it, they're going to come get you.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to mill lab you. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. They're going to take you and see what they can find out from you. Because you just got on radio and said, I know this, that, and the other thing, they're going to come take you. Now, we've had cases, especially with the Greys, where the Greys have showed up and retrieved a mill lab. Because of whatever reasons they – because, you know, all the aliens keep a – what I would call a low-level telepathic connection to their contactees. And so I imagine when they're in distress, they know about it, especially if it's distress on something that matters for what they're doing. I'm pretty sure they'll intervene regularly on that.
Right.
But you know, how often it happens is another thing. Now, so they find out that, and occasionally through psychology and some of the other fields, you know, counseling and stuff like that, they do find other contactees. You know, you may go in like Barney. See, everybody always, you know, when you talk about Betty and Barney Hill, everybody thinks Betty's the contactee. It's not really true. Barney's the contactee.
Mm-hmm.
And that weren't both. She was just along for the ride like most spouses are. Barney had been having these weird episodes since he was a young man. He had been in and out of psychology for a long time. Think about this. This is a black man married to a white woman in 1961.
Mm-hmm.
And managed to get on television and go speak around the country, and no one, not one person, did anything to hate on them whatsoever. This is back when they were doing forced busing and people were killing themselves.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, but yet somehow this guy walked unscathed. More importantly than that, you know, he was a postman that got invited to meet the president and speak at the White House. Okay, and more important than that, at his home, three of his best friends were military captains. One of them lived, I think it was a colonel, lived on his property.
Mm-hmm.
So they knew from the get-go this guy was a contactee. They were watching him. They were following him. That's what they were doing. And what everybody misses with the Betty and Barney Hill case, because everybody always talks about Connecticut. Barney and Betty, if you go through some of their hypnosis tapes, but even better, some of the late 60s and early 70s radio shows that they did, which are priceless, you will hear them. First off, Barney never calls him an alien, ever.
Mm-hmm.
No interviews at any given time, not either under hypnosis, does he call them aliens. He just doesn't. More importantly than that, there's three sets of memories, three separate sets of memories. So there's the memories of what they thought happened. Then there's the abduction of memories, and then there's the Milad memories, three different sets of memories. That's how we knew what it was from the get-go. Mm-hmm. So we're pretty sure what happened was they were on vacation in Canada doing their thing, and they got taken. And this is how you know what happened in Canada. They checked into a hotel. Neither one could remember the name of the hotel. They checked out of the hotel. You know, you get a sign in and out of a hotel. They could still not remember the name of the hotel. They went across the street to a restaurant, had breakfast, could not remember the place they had breakfast or the name of the hotel. Mm-hmm. About an hour later, they stopped to ask a gentleman for directions. Barney describes him as a black policeman. Betty describes him as a white Irishman. Wow. How do you get that distinctly different? And no research has caught that. I broke this on Coast to Coast about 8 years ago. No one caught this. I'm like, how could you miss? This is classic abduction 101. Mm-hmm. So, you know, now we know they were taken in Canada, which now makes the case much simpler. They were taken in Canada. I'm pretty sure Betty and Barney Hill are the first known military abduction case. So when they get to Connecticut, when they get back in the United States, this is Betty and Barney Hill's. They're saying, oh, we're watching this thing hover, hover, hover. And they get up to it. They said this. They were stopped on a highway. Four men walked up to the cars. Four men looped their arms under each other and brought them to this craft walking upstairs. First off, I haven't heard of an alien abduction walking upstairs in any of the advanced aliens ever. I've heard it in other type of cases, but not in greys, reptilians, or humans. They just don't use conventional stairs like we do. It's antiquated to them. They either usually drag you on board, beam you on board, or they do have ability to walk on, but you just never see them. It's rare that they even land their ships. So we knew right then and then. So that here he is. So this is how he describes it, guys. Black pants, black shirts, black duck-billed caps, black boots. This is typical DEA or surveillance-type organization or one of the military organizations. This is definitely not alien. They get on board the ship. She talks about swinging doors, pull-down maps. They took and this was a kicker. I checked with CDC about this, the Center for Disease Control. They took fluid samples, hair and skin samples, nail samples, other types of samples that if you had been contaminated and exposed to a particular environment, these are the things you would take to find out what kind of contamination there was. This was not alien. They used typical, regular, everyday needles. There was nothing special, stainless steel tables. This is not an alien contact. Anyway, you look at this. She said, well, there was one little weirdo on the ship. Occasionally there is a gray involved with a military abduction. But even that, I don't think that's what that was. I think that was something else. She talks about paperback books. What contact have you ever talked to that had seen a paperback book aboard a UFO? And then he handed her a hardback book, sliding and opening drawers. You're not going to see a sliding drawer on a spacecraft, ladies and gentlemen. You're not even going to see swinging doors on one. Mm-hmm. Because at high speeds or high banking maneuvers, stuff's going to go flying everywhere.
Nice.
And what's funny about this is when Kathleen Maldren wrote the second book or the third book, she changed some of it. And they said it was a video screen. Well, that's a lie. If you go read the book and listen to them, she says clearly it's a pull down map. Mm-hmm. So they even tried to do like add stuff about the dress. Well, the dress was useless as evidence. It was 30 years after the fact. You couldn't do it with anything. Like the star map. Really? I can take any three stars and make them to any constellation I want. There's just 200. Well, actually, now I think there's 400 billion in our galaxy since they just expanded the size of our galaxy from 100 light years to 160. Mm-hmm. So none of this was real evidence. And Barney was always the one that was hush-hub, quiet, and disappeared. And they were having consistent stuff, and then he died at a young age. Mm-hmm. And then it pretty much stopped for her. I mean, she was calling in this and calling MUFON about this and saying she cited this and cited that, but there was no real evidence or anything else. I would bet if they were both alive tonight, I could polygraph them. I guarantee you'd find out that Barney was the contactee. And if you did it just by the evidence at hand, there's no doubt that he was a contactee. Mm-hmm. And she was just along for the ride. And even that, when she's talking, she says, oh, no, he was talking to me. He was handing me a book. They weren't really doing to her what they were doing to him. Mm-hmm. So that shows you right there who they were interested in.
And this is all for memory retrieval, right? For Barney's retrieval. Okay, memory. Okay.
Yeah, so they just, you know, whatever happened in Canada when they were alien abducted, the government knew about it. They were probably following them, tailing them, watching, and they just disappeared off the scope. And then when they found them again, they said, okay, they didn't want to abduct them in Canada because, you know, it's a different country. But when they got in the U.S., and they weren't long in the U.S. when they snatched them, And that, I would bet you money that is the first military abduction. And because of the dreams he was having and how what's-his-name did the regressions and how choppy his memory was, it made sense because back then the government wasn't all that good about covering. They really aren't that good about covering memories today. And today they have the use of sodium phenethol, sodium amethol, a couple other drugs that can really, really help. So they have that today, but they really didn't have it back then. And I just always thought it was funny because when I reviewed it and I seen the three sets of dreams, that's what sent me looking. And then, of course, the more I looked, the more I found. It was just sad that it was 30 years after the fact that an abduction researcher looked at the case and found there was a whole entire – and the bad part about this is I told George Norrie this. He goes – and this is exactly what he said before I started talking. He goes, Joe, you're never going to change my mind about Roswell. So I'm going on about 20 minutes, and then I shut up, right? And you don't hear nothing for like a minute and a half. No. I said, what's up, George? He said, I think you changed my mind, Jeff.
Oh,
he said, I should learn not to say not in a way. Because it's just a better explanation for the case. And it doesn't make Betty or Barney a liar. It just shows there was more to the case. Kathleen refuses to accept this. And later on down the line, she said, well, yeah, they were MILAB later on, but that case was alien. No. The case in Canada was alien. The case in the United States was MILAB. But instead of accepting it for the information, because I have way more experience in abduction research than she does, she's going to argue about it. And I just thought it was funny because when you do the rebuttal, there's a rebuttal between her and I on the ICAR site, ladies and gentlemen, if you're interested talking about the Hills, I tranced her. It was a no-win situation for her.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that she changed part of the story in her book did not bode well for her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't – and see, that's what people happens, though. You go buy the book. You don't know about the case, so you read the book. That's what you think's happened. 10 days online, you hear, well, wait, that's – wait, what's this other book, which is mm-hmm. different? You know, because really they did – they did the video. They said it was a video on the wall. Something else about some light thing, and then, of course, they got what's-her-name to try to authenticate the star map. And I was like, there's no way – and this is how you knew they were BSing people, because there was no source point. There was no point of reference. Even Betty said there was no point of reference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were at Earth, and she said, this is where we live. But they never showed her the point of reference between the two planets. So if you would have had those two points, then you could have used the constellation to find out where it was. But without both points, there's no possible way to find out what constellation that was, because you can look at the night sky and arrange the stars in any pattern that you want to, because there's so many stars. You can highlight, you can take a screen full of stars, take your map and just keep laying it around and to keep moving it until you find a cluster of stars that roughly agrees with them. If they're lighter, fainter stars further away, you can always, you know, make them whiter so they look more brilliant. And of course, then you have what you would consider it. But that was just a load. And that was all about, the end parts were just all about money and fame. There was just nothing else. It was really more about fame than anything. Billy Myers got some of the best pictures I've taken, but he's got some of the most hoax pictures I've ever seen taken too. So,
mm-hmm. How can you tell, Joe?
Well, actually, with Billy Myers, his works all went to DreamWorks, courtesy of Michael Horn and a few others that were speaking for him. When I first interviewed Michael Horn, we're talking on Wake Up USA, this is 14 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He's telling me this whole spiel about Billy Myers, and I'm like, okay. I said, well, this photo looks fake. He said, well, they all been sent to DreamWorks. And he said, they all were authenticated. So I called a friend of mine, Bruce Willing, over at DreamWorks, and said, dude, did he send you these pictures, or are you just blowing smoke? I called him while I was on the air, by the way. He said, oh, no. Yeah, because I don't like being BS'd.
Uh-huh.
So he goes, I said, oh, no, Joe. He said, they sent me 26 pictures. He said, 18 of them, 16 or 18 of them are definitely legitimate. We couldn't even reproduce them today. He said, but the other 8 are fake. He said, you can see the pixelation in them. They were definitely fake.
Hmm.
He said, there's no ifs, ands, or buts that these pictures were fake. So he asked me, he said, was this just something to say? I said, no. I said, this is all pictures this guy took. The Muslim guy, he's been everybody.
Right.
And he's going to be the Messiah's coming. That's a little much ego for me, buddy.
Uh-huh.
And that's another thing about contactees, especially the ones that aren't always telling you the truth. They always make it about yourself. It's always self-important.
Mm-hmm.
That's
wow.
An ego trip.
That is so mind-blowing, I tell you what. And, of course, I was thinking what came to mind was maybe Billy Myers, those photos that were faked, or mixed up with maybe government infiltration, maybe coming in and adding some extra.
Some of it probably was. I really think in Billy's case, and I talked to Stephen, I think it's Stephen Hess is his name, because, you know, Billy doesn't write anything in English. It has to be translated. And a friend of mine who's Scandinavian, or actually Norwegian, I actually told him, no, I've met Billy a couple times, Joe. He said, I like Billy. And he said, I think Billy's legit for the most part. He said, but I think he's let his ego and his thirst to be in the public eye, you know, kind of taint what he does. He said, obviously some of these photos are fake. He said he's called him on it before. Mm-hmm. And he said the same thing I did. He said, I think what happened was, is in the early days, there was a lot of contact. But like I said earlier in the show, sometimes you're not as useful, so the contact may stop or even slow down a lot. Mm-hmm. So I think that was part of it. He didn't get the opportunities to get those photos anymore.
Right.
Since he already had photos of the ship, he just reproduced them. He just didn't realize that in old school cameras, you can use grayscale pixelation to find out if they've been hoaxed
mm-hmm.
or if they've been something else has been changed. See, today it's a lot harder. Digital phones and digital cameras are a biatch because you can fake. I can go outside right now, take a picture of you, take a picture of a UFO. Separate pictures. Send them to my computer, put them together, have you standing in the UFO or alien standing next to you. Send them back to my phone and say, hey, look at the picture I just took.
Cool.
and if I gave it, there's no way to tell it's fake. None whatsoever. It just looks like a picture I just took. And it's just sad.
Uh-huh. It is.
So we tell our investigators these days, carry at least one analog camera. You know, we prefer that they use digital video cameras, even though analog's nice because it's easier to tell if it's fake or real. But digital's always got more definition and usually better range and better zoom. So we tell them to use that, but always bring it. And I prefer if they use a starboard sealed 35-millimeter camera because then there's no question did you mess with it or not. Mm-hmm. When I send it to Kodak or Polaroid, they'll let me know if the camera's been opened or not. And besides that, if you open one with the film, it's going to expose the film, so you're going to know that anyway. So now you've got a videotape and maybe some pictures taken by a camera phone or another phone, but now you've got hardcore 35-millimeter film, 400 gold usually, in a sealed camera that hasn't been tampered with. So even if you question the digital, once the 35-millimeter is developed, you can't really question it anymore. Because now you have it on alternative film, and it just makes it just adds a lot more credibility to someone's case, is what it does.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But, you know,
and you're incredible, Joe. You blow my mind, honestly. I love the way you're so thorough, too, because a lot of people won't do that, you know. They won't go that extra mile to decode some of this data.
Well,
really,
I like to fight and argue with the ufology community, especially the abduction community. So I tell them all the time, I told this, I'm not going to mention her name because she got smart with me. When I said, look, I said, if you're going to debate me about abduction research, you better have your ducks in a row. I said, because we don't do this half baloney stuff that MUFON and other people do. I said, we do real hardcore investigations. I said, we don't sell anything to anybody. Everything's kept inside the organization. Everyone's required to sign a non-disclosure agreement, and we're not a 501c3. We are a privately funded organization. There is no money coming from the government. There's no being owing anything to the government. There's nobody donating to the organization. Mostly, it's the directors that pay for what goes on. So the thing about it is we're just a much different, and nothing can be made into a movie or written into a book without my written permission, my national director's permission, and the person we're talking about's permission, because mm-hmm. it's legal and binding. You do have to sign a non-disclosure. And the reason why is I've watched with MUFON and other organizations how people take other people's contacts and make it into a book or a movie or whatever, and it's just wrong. You know, there's some legitimate people out there that do legitimate stuff, but there's a lot of them that you just kind of wonder about, and you know, like the Roswell slides.
What do you think about that? I mean, I don't know. I haven't really done any research on.
Well, the Roswell slides. I'll say this: I don't think the film itself was hoaxed. I think they're probably Egyptian mummies. They're definitely not aliens. And the funny part to me was. And this is what kind of got me miffed at Richard and Jamie, was why didn't they call one of the abduction researchers and ask them what a typical gray looks like? Before you go on national television and say, oh, we got a gray, or we got a reptilian, why don't you call someone who does this and has been doing it, I'm going on 31 years now, and ask somebody ahead of time,
right.
You know, and instead of putting yourself and your name and your reputation on the line, why don't you just ask? I mean, come on. First off, the amount of fingers was wrong for a gray that size. Actually, the height was wrong for a gray that size. It should have been a little bit taller than that. The skeleton, grays don't have bones, guys. They have cartilage.
Good point.
You know, so right off the bat, they blew it. They don't have those kind of feet. They don't have those kind of hands. And they don't have human teeth.
Oh, wow. They need to talk to you.
Plus, they don't have a nose like that. They don't have ears like that. I mean, just any 101 alien abduction grade person could tell you, oh, well, they don't have ears. They got kind of a slit for a nose. They got a real small slit for a mouth. They got pointy, kind of strange teeth. Depending on what size they are, three to five fingers. No opposable thumbs in the way that we have, and it's a different kind of setup. It's It's like an opposable thumb, but it's much more agile, and I guess because it's cartilage. But they don't have typical bone structure like we do. That's why a 3 foot gray is three times as strong as a guy my size. You know, I'm 5'11", 240 pounds. I should be able to grab him by his little foot and drag him around, but no, it's the other way around. They're much more powerful than we are.
What about holographic projections? Is that used a lot with inductions, abductions?
Actually, we call them two types of non-physical abductions. One of them is basically in your head. The whole thing is. Sometimes they'll pick you up and bring you on board the ship and put you in like a holodeck or a holo room for training purposes. But a lot of times they don't even do that. They upload your consciousness into the mainframe.
Yep.
As far as you're concerned, it's all real. But they never physically take your body. Your body stays in bed. There's another type where they upload your consciousness to what we like to call a host body. But a lot of times they do non-physical abductions where it's just in your head. It's like a data burst sent to your head. Because we know they've been doing downloads for a long time. This is a little bit different than a download, though. It's the whole thing happens inside of your head. It's kind of like a matrix.
Mm-hmm.
So we call those non-physical abductions. And those are usually information-based or organizationally based or something to do with what you're going to be doing over the next couple of years.
Right.
Usually they'll do it like that. A lot of the training stuff is done in a non-abduction form. They'll just basically take your consciousness and suck it up to the ship and do it like that. What's interesting about this, ladies and gentlemen, and more important, is our government has been working on this for a decade now, uploading your consciousness into a new host body. In case y'all didn't know this, the government removed all bans on stem cell research in the West of our country. Okay, so if you're out in California, New Mexico, Arizona, Nevada, they can actually do stem cell research now. Well, about 12 years ago, a gentleman stuck a chip in his head to see if he could record memories. It worked. He put a microchip in his head, and it recorded his memories. So then they decided, well, you know what? If we can do this, there should be a way to scan the entire brain, record everything that's in the brain, and simply upload it into a new consciousness. The Greys and Reptilians and all do this on a regular basis. It's one of the reasons everybody thought that big breeding program was to save the Greys and Reptilians. The Greys don't need saving. They don't want to look like us. They like what they look like. Those are host bodies for us. And if you ever notice, when you hear people talk about them, they talk about seeing their cells, but slightly different because the bodies are designed
right.
A little bit different. It's like it's for a little bit heavier environment than ours, like they're being taken off world or something. But they talk about those on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
But going back to Rich and Holly and him, I just don't understand why they didn't do a little research first. Obviously, it's not a gray. It's obviously not a reptilian because it has no crowns, no forks, no marks, no scales. And well, I wouldn't call them scales, but they look like scales. They're just not actually scales. Mm-hmm. And it had no features of a gray. And Holly should have known it. Remember, Holly's the one that had the gray that reached out and touched the kid in the hall in Mexico. You know, he peeked around the corner and he tried to touch the kid. That was creepy. That was also fake. But still, I mean, if you went by that video alone, he would have known that wasn't a gray.
Right. That's what I mean. There's so much – well, I don't want to say it's disinformation. Maybe they're just, you know, not getting it. But still, I mean, once you start that flame, it just takes off and everybody gets chaotic or
– And what I thought was funny is they said, well, we can prove the pictures were taken in 1947. Okay, so Roswell happened in 1947. But you can also prove that these pictures – a geologist had these pictures. I said, this guy may have been on field expedition somewhere and seen this and took it. There's no doubt. Look, in the slides, ladies and gentlemen, these things are on glass display cases. Okay? There's little white peg rails running up with white clips, and then they're laying on a glass table with a glass booth around them. Obviously, there's other artifacts in there. You can see them. One looks like a gorilla head. There's some other stuff there. Behind the glass is a lady in a blue dress with red gloves. Don't sound like a researcher to me. But here's the real kicker, and this tells you that these guys did this for money. This tells you how easy this is to prove. 1947, July, what, fourth weekend. That's the crash of Roswell. So we're 6 months into 1947. So that body, you've seen how badly decayed it is. It decayed in, what, 2 months? I mean, well, you know, the pictures were taken somewhere between July 4th and December 31st. So at the very most, you can give it 6 months. More than likely, because it was the holidays and all, it was probably within 2 or 3 months of the Roswell crash that they were taken. So you're going to tell me a body was that badly decomposed in 3 months. That's an impossibility, even if it is an alien. Mm-hmm. More importantly, there is not a shot in hell that the U.S. government is going to lay out an alien on a glass table for people to walk around and see. It would have either been stuck and frozen somewhere or stuck in formaldehyde somewhere. It would not have been left out to rot and decompose in any shape, form, or fashion. That in itself was just I just couldn't even believe they tried to put that off on the general public. I was like, you got to be kidding me. There is no way the U.S. government is going to take an alien body, in this case two alien bodies, and let them decompose. And you could even tell they had been wrapped. In one of them, you can see the wrapping underneath the body.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of like, that's mummy wrapping. There's no doubt what that is. And there's a body on top of it. Yeah, it's pretty much given it's a mummy. But at that point, they should have realized the government is not, because you know, where they messed up was is they should have said these pictures were taken in the 2000 and it has been 40 years since it happened. And yeah, they decomposed, but they're trying to say that these bodies decompose like this in 2 to 6 months. Whether you want to say it's alien or not, these aliens live on this planet. They breathe this atmosphere, so I doubt they're going to decompose any faster or slower than we do. And I can't see the U.S. government and all of its scientists allowing two extraterrestrial bodies to decompose, because even they had to think 50 years from then, technology and DNA research would be much more advanced. We should hold on to the bodies until such a point that we can actually understand what we have.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way. They would have been locked up in a deep, dark vault somewhere in some type of thing. And that 2 months after, even 6 months after, they wouldn't even through looking at the bodies yet.
Right.
They would have still been studying these things for years after this. They wouldn't have been on display anyway. I was just floored that anybody even believed it. I was like, but what really floored me more was the big names that mm-hmm. signed off on it. I was like, I would say at least three of them hurt their careers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It takes away credibility from them now.
Oh, yeah.
And I've heard several of them defending this, but none of them have had to deal with me yet. They've been getting little fluff questions.
Well, I love having you on, Joe, so let's bring it on. With that being said, we're going to head for a break real quick. We'll be right back, everybody. Please stay tuned. Hyperspace with Joe Montaldo. Welcome back, everybody, to the Dark Matter Radio Network. This is Hyperspace. I'm Solaris Blue Raven, and I'm here with my very special guest, Joe Montaldo. Hey, Joe, you with me?
I'm still here.
Oh, I just love having you on tonight. I want to thank you again for joining us. And once again, if people want to access your materials and, of course, the website and how to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
www.icar1.com or icar1.com. I keep it really, really easy. You can always find me also at uprn.net or upn.org. You can find a lot of our materials on Podbean, SoundCloud, PodGarden. GoDaddy's gone now, which depresses me, but quite a few others, Podomatic. Pretty much all of the major podcast sites we're on these days. And check it out. We've got years and years worth of materials out there. Not all the UFO on the covers and not all the Wake Up USAs are available, but you can write to me if it's a show you're looking for particularly. And then some of them are also, unfortunately, some of the much, much older shows are on pay for listen only. But check them out. If it's something good or if you're doing research, write to me. We dole out a lot of material to different people so they can do particular different research projects.
Excellent. What's your radio? What's the name of your radio show again, and where is that found?
You got the Joe Montaldo Show / UFO on the Cover, which is on United Public Radio and the UFO Paranormal Radio Network, Wednesday nights from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Time. So either one of those, United Public Radio or UFO Paranormal Radio, they both belong to me. Or if you're in the South, 107.7 FM, which I own in New Orleans, and 105.3 on the Gulf Coast in Mississippi out of Henderson Point. You can catch us on those as well. And the whole host of other venues like Lodge Music, the whole realm of Microsoft, Livestream, Ustream, Shoutcast, the whole nine yards. We have servers on all of them these days. So I'm really easy to find. Best way is just type in my name and away you go. Also, be sure to check us out on Facebook. We have 8 Facebook accounts. We have 2 MySpace accounts. We have a Google account. We have a Twitter account, and we are active on all of the accounts. It's nice to find us. The Paranormal Radio Network on Facebook, we post a lot of archives and a lot of stuff we're doing. The UFO on the Cover site and the Facebook page will have whatever the show's doing currently. And then all the other pages are either personal pages or pages for other shows that I host or other stuff that I'm involved with, like the iCar. I think the iCar page is up to 8,000 or 9,000 people now. I see y'all are on TuneIn. I might have to put the station on TuneIn. I don't think I have it on TuneIn, but I see a lot of people using it these days, so I might have to go put it over there. It's on so much stuff, though. It's hard to keep track.
Right. Well, it's kind of good. You get it all over the place, you know. Get that
transition going. We want to catch people. And actually, the thing about it is GoDaddy heard us. GoDaddy, we were doing about 4 million downloads a month, 4 million downloads and plays a month on GoDaddy. And when we lost them, it hurt our standings on iTunes and a couple other places because of the amount of traffic we got there. And the reason why is, you know, we've had GoDaddy for 12 years, and it was connected to about 2,500 outsources. Well, they didn't even give us any warning. They gave us 15 days warning and said they're closing down the thing and they're not doing the radio on GoDaddy anymore. Because of that, though, I got rid of most of my business with my transfer. I had 140 domains with them, which I transferred away because of that. And three or four websites, which are now on Homestead. Because I'm like, come on, guys. That was a cheesy thing to do. Just the way they did it was just kind of cheesy. But, hey, companies got to make their money. I do understand that.
Right. Well, you're awesome in what you do. You know, you keep ufology real, and I love that about you and the work you're doing. You know,
oh, I'm sure they hate that about me.
Well, you know, I don't know. I love having you on my show. I must say it's a breath of fresh air. So thank you for being with us tonight.
Oh, they love me coming to radio shows. They just, ufology itself is like, please stay away. You're evil.
Why? Because you make them look bad, right?
Yeah, because they don't like honesty. Well, you know what it is? They don't like real explanations. They like these ones where, oh, these peace, love, and lighters have come here, and they love us, and they're enlightening us, and they're helping us out, and they're doing this. My answer to that is always, it's not that they can't be peace, love, and lighting, unless they might be. The real problem is here, don't tell me they're here to save us or enlighten us, because look at the planet we live on. Aliens have been here a long time, 6,000 to 600,000 years at least. No one really knows. We know they've been here for a long, long time. And look at the place. It's a mess, people. That's not any enlightened aliens out here going, oh, we're teaching you how to be good people. Nah, I think they may have screwed up. You know, look at China, look at Russia, look at India for that matter, look at the Middle East. This isn't an enlightened species. I'm talking about humans. It's not an enlightened species. We're just not. And we're not really being enlightened. And if all the ETs can do is enlighten one new age every blue moon, that's not going to accomplish anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that they can't be good aliens or bad aliens or indifferent. It's just I judge aliens like I do everybody else by their actions. Their actions dictate a much different thing than what ufology wants to put out there. First off, they're not calling you up and saying, hey, soul, can I come pick you up? I want to take you out this Friday night. We're going to bring you up to the ship. We're going to serve you some food. We're going to put you through these training programs, do a little probe, and drop you back off around 2 a.m. No, that's not what they're doing. They just snatch you up, do whatever, and stick you back and kind of halfway wipe out some memories or completely wipe them out. But either way, I mean, you're left feeling used and abused, even if you think it's a good contact.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell everybody this all the time. Any race that's willing to take you without your permission, regardless if you think they're good or not, can only be so good. I mean, come on. They're taking you against your will. And unless they're calling you and telling you, contact these, well, I made a deal. When did you make a deal? When you were 5 or 2? How could you make a deal with aliens when you – why did it in last life? Oh, no, I don't want to hear that stuff. Because first
break
off –
the contract, yeah?
Yeah. Well, first off, what's funny about all this is they wouldn't need a contract. Let's say Bob DeGray abducts you, okay? Well, Bob DeGray is the one that abducted your mom. He's also the one that abducted your grandmother and your great-grandmother and your great-great-grandmother and so on and so forth, probably back 10,000 years or more. Remember, Grays have, well, as far as we know, unlimited lifespans. Most people think a million-plus years, but we don't really know. We just know they're really, really, really long. So it's the same Gray abducting in your family, the same three Grays. It's not like it's a new Gray every generation. It's why some of the craft are so familiar to children, because it was the same craft you were picked up on when you were 5.
Mm-hmm.
Now that you're 50, it's still the same craft. And unfortunately for them, they build stuff that lasts. We build stuff that has to be replaced every so often. But it's still the same thing. So this Gray, Bob DeGray, has abducted in your family for 10 generations, maybe 100 generations. He knows you intimately. He knows your soul. If there is reincarnation, he knows your soul better than you could ever possibly know it. He has been watching you grow and expand for 10,000 years. He's going to really know you much better. And if there was reincarnation, he would recognize you or she would recognize you when you came back.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it kind of puts a rough on reincarnation in the way we think of it. And probably exist in a different form. The way we're thinking about it as we come back and because, you know, you got to wonder about savants and stuff. When you see a savant, you've got to stop and wonder. That's good evidence for reincarnation, but there's other things that aren't. Like, here's a good one, ladies and gentlemen. You see a tunnel when you're born, you see a tunnel when you die. Mm-hmm. Right? Well, think about this. What if it's the same tunnel?
Right. Good point.
What is it? What happens if you die and are just reborn? In other words, and they always say the same thing. Well, I lost a bunch of my family and friends standing around. Well, baby, people who have been regressed to the moment of birth say the same thing. I go through this tunnel and here's the light and here's my family. There's no difference.
Right.
They're describing the same thing. So what's really funny about this is quite possible that when you die, you're just reborn in the next pregnant person. There is no waiting. There's nothing in between. You're just instantly reborn somewhere else. Mm-hmm. The scary part to that is where does the extra souls come from?
Right. Wow.
So it's got to be something. I mean, somewhere they're coming from somewhere. But
that's a good point you make right there.
I just find it interesting. It's you know, whether it's true or not is anybody's best guess. That's why I dabble in the paranormal. But it's like ghosts. I make the ghosty people mad all the time.
Cool.
Because, for me, it's different. I live in New Orleans. I mean, I live in one of the most haunted cities that exist on the planet. I mean, we've got above-ground graveyards all over the place, the size of city blocks. We've been dealing with voodoo and ghosties for a long time. And, you know, I've had some weird experience. Here's one for you. A lot of people say they see their parent when they die. Now, we all know under duress that under enough duress, you can probably open the thin veil between worlds. But what I'm not talking about the spirit world. So here comes your daddy's talking to you. Well, what's funny about it is like Laura just the other day. Oh, you know, my dad died a couple months ago and he came and see me. I said, well, tell me about it. She's telling me about it. I said, well, what did he look like? Oh, well, he's wearing this red shirt. He hated red shirts and these blue jeans, and he hated blue jeans. And she's telling me that, and then she goes on about and he was talking about something I didn't quite understand what he's talking about. What I think really happens a lot of times in these cases is because of duress, you're actually seeing them. And I'm not talking about the dad that gave you birth. I'm talking about the dad that gave you birth in the next dimension over. Mm-hmm. So as far as you're concerned, it's still your dad. You're still talking to him. You're his daughter. He's talking to you. He sees you. You see him. Y'all are talking. But the reason this came up is because every case I've ever heard about it that's happened, they always say the same thing. It's just slightly off. It's not quite right. It's my dad, but, like one lady said, it was my dad, but he had sandy blonde hair when he was a brunette. Or it was my dad, but his accent was a little funny. Or it was my dad, and he called me this. Or it was my dad, and he said, when did you change your hair color? Stuff like that. You know, and it doesn't sound like a dead person talking to a live person. It sounds like two live people talking to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously the dad or the mom thinks he's still alive if he is dead. But it's those subtle differences that make me think that under duress, because thanks to Michio Kaku and a few others, we do know there is alternate dimensions now, mm-hmm. and overlapping time and space. So
right.
We know that there's multiple dimensions out there now. We know that they're rubbing up against us, just like there's multiple universes because of the multiplex theory. We know all this exists now.
Right.
So knowing that means that you exist, you yourself exist, and this is the kicker about reincarnation. I'm going to fill this in a minute. You exist in, what, 100 billion worlds? Well, here's a question for you. If you exist in 100 billion worlds, so that means you're going to live every instance you can think of. There'll be a good soul, a bad soul, a crazy one, a nutsy one, a sexy one, an insane one, and everything, one in prison, one that killed someone, one that got murdered. Everything instant you can think of happened to this individual. So why would there be reincarnation? Because at the moment of all those deaths, those souls snap back together to one soul.
Mm-hmm. Good
so
point.
Now you've experienced everything possible in the universe in one lifetime. So why would you need reincarnation? You would just move on to another plane or another existence, I guess, or maybe into a more advanced one. I have no idea, but these kind of theories really get me in trouble with the paranormal.
No, it makes perfect sense to me because
but it gets me in trouble.
Well, you exist if you're going in the spectrum of multidimensional consciousness, and we exist as multidimensional beings existing simultaneously, you know, in the multiverse, whatever you want to call it. So, yeah, that would make sense. Yeah, I believe reincarnation, honestly, is an option. I don't believe people are forced to incarnate unless they want to.
And you know what else is weird about it? It would also explain some of the weird knowledges that people get out of the blue.
Mm-hmm.
You're connected to yourself somewhere else. You're like, wow, I learned how to do this. Or where did this knowledge come from? Because, you know, you find out they almost always have more knowledge than they have education.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter what location, whether they were high school dropout or have a master's. There always seems to be more information than there is education. Now, you can contribute that through life. You know, you live, you learn, and move on. But some of this you just can't. Some of this actually had to have taken some type of schooling to know and understand. Like, I was on whose show was it? It was out of New York City, and we started talking about what's his name in the wheelchair? Stephen Hawking. And I was quoting out of one of his books, Universe in a Nutshell. I've never read the book, by the way. Still to this day, I've never read the book. Never even picked it up. I can quote this book verse and chapter almost the whole entire book. And I've never one time picked this book up. And it's just funny. So we were doing some experiments with some contactees to see if anybody else had, you know, could do stuff like that. And it just seems like, you know, they've got information that, you know, so in another life, I obviously read that book. Mm-hmm. Or maybe when I was on board a ship, or maybe it was downloaded, because, you know, the Greys download information all the time. Maybe it was downloaded. Regardless, it's information that I didn't have. I have an outstanding education in physics. Two of my really good friends teach physics for a living, both college professors. And I make them crazy, because the other day we debate. He says, "George, there's no way you can know more about this than I do." He says, "It's impossible." I said, "Well, apparently it's not." And he gets furious with me. I mean, we've been debating for almost 15 years. He even comes in the chat room sometimes and just goes insane. I've had Michio Kaku on. I've talked to him about the Stepping Stone Theory. Blew his mind right out the water. He was like, matter of fact, I've been mentioned on his show before. On right. The Stepping Stone Theory, by the way. Because we got into a debate on how we're going to colonize the universe. Because we were talking about extraterrestrials and they had to do this and fast. And I said, Michio, I said, you know about the Stepping Stone Theory. He said, why? I said, at the time, the known galaxy was only 100,000 light years across. It's been updated to 160. But anyway, it was 100,000 light years across. I said, okay, let's say the Greys are an old race. The universe is, our galaxy is 13.9 billion years old. So let's say the Greys are 2 billion year old race. It's 100,000 light years across. They've managed to get up to half a light speed. That means they can cross the entire galaxy in 200,000 years. So if they leave their planet and go out in their solar system, build a couple stepping stones, go out halfway between the next solar system, build a couple, build one and a new one, keep going and keep going, after about 200, maybe 300,000 years, they will have traveled from one end of the galaxy to the other end. I said, now, here's a race that's been doing this for millions of years, which means they are all over the known, and they don't need fast and light speed. They can just step from one place to the next place to the next place to the next place. So they're always moving forward. It's how we're going to do it. Mm-hmm. Just to put this in perspective for people, we're going to build a base in the moon sometime in the next decade. We're going to build a launching platform out in zone L11, which is about halfway between Mars and Earth. It's an excellent place to launch spaceships from. It's going to probably be where we start building at. Then we're going to set up a colony on Mars. After the Martian colony is set up, which will probably be a refining colony because they're going to start putting up independent outposts in the asteroid belt. After that, they're going to probably put something out in the Io or Europa, probably both. After that, somewhere in the Oort cloud. After that, somewhere between the Oort cloud and Proxima Centauri. Proxima Centauri is 3.78 light years away. At the end of the Oort cloud, we're only 1.7 light years away from Proxima Centauri. So if we launch a craft from there, even a half light speed, it'll be there in 3 years. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing here. We can actually do this, and we can explore our entire galaxy just by stepping stones. It may take us 500,000 years to do it, but we can do it. And we don't have to go faster than light or anything else for that matter. And as we're building and setting up colonies and setting up bases and setting up new worlds, we're taking our society out and forward. So we're still carrying the same values, the same interests and all is moving out there. And what it allows you to do is, let's say – I leave Earth, okay, so I go to Mars and hang out there for a little while, then I go out to the Oort cloud, I go out to one of the ones near Europa, it takes about 8 months to get there. From there, I go out to the Oort cloud and hang out for about a year, it takes about 8 months to get there. So it's about 4 years for me now, I'm sitting out there at the end of the Oort cloud, all of a sudden, we jump from the Oort cloud to midway to Proxima Centauri, which is about a light year away, about 2 years to get there. So now we're less than a light year from Proxima, I hop out, so in 8 years, from 10 years, I'm going from Earth to Proxima Centauri. And meanwhile, it's not a big nasty trip, and I don't have to carry a bunch of stuff because I'm stopping and staying places along the way. I may spend 6 months here, 7 months there, 3 months here, a year here, but I'm still steadily moving towards my destination. Bam, I'm there. Mm-hmm. And I've set up my colony and started moving. Well, my kids are going to probably go to the next colony out, or my grandkids or whatever. They're going to probably go out to the next colony, and it's going to just keep snowballing along. What always bothers me is sooner or later we're going to figure out how to go faster than light, and we're going to pass ourselves up. Mm-hmm. That's why I always said, I don't know about this freezing people. I said, because, you know, we'll unlaunch somebody after they've been floating around for 500 years. Here comes, you know, Star Trek Enterprise zipping by you.
Right. Yeah.
You get to the colony, there's a full-blown planet going on. You're like, huh? What happened here? So it's just strange as I've been working. But it's all stuff we can do. And, you know, I've had a real good scientific education. I've got a bachelor's in advanced avionics and electronics. I asked this to somebody one time. I said, who in the ufology field actually has the pedigree to really investigate and chase lights in the sky? I said, does anybody at MUFON actually have any knowledge, you know, working knowledge of avionics or any? None of them do. Nobody does. So I've got, let me see, right now, I've got advanced aircraft recognition from the U.S. Navy. I've got advanced avionics and electronics from the U.S. Navy, which was converted by Delta into a bachelor's degree in advanced avionics and advanced electronics. I have a license. I'm a licensed hypnotherapist. I'm actually a licensed hypnotherapist trainer. I have skills for I've actually was trained in voice stress analysis and facial recognition and facial recognition software. I used to do this. It had nothing to do with ufology, by the way. This was for a big company. I'm not going to mention their name, that I used to do hiring and firing for. So I used to do voice stress, and we would set up a language, facial recognition software, and also body language. And we would test to see if they were lying. I was really good. I'm still really, really good at it. Mm-hmm. And matter of fact, when we do hypnosis, and this is unique to anybody in the field, this is how ICAR does its hypnosis sessions. Let's say Solaris had a contact. She calls me. I'm going to say, okay, why don't you come see me? I said, the first thing I'm going to do, we're going to talk a little bit. We're not going to talk about the case, and you're going to give me a date and a time, and then I'm going to put you under. And I'm going to ask you to tell me backwards what happened on this date and time. And you're going to start reciting to me. Now, this is being videotaped. While it's being videotaped, it's also being audio taped. But more importantly, right on the side of it, you're going to see a little screen that's a voice stress analysis. And the reason we do this is not to determine whether you're lying or telling the truth. This is to tell me where I need to be looking the next time we talk. So if you say, well, I've seen this ship moving along, because I'm not going to ask you any questions the first time. I'm just going to let you tell me in your own words, and next time we do a hypnosis, we'll formulate a line of questions. So you're going to tell me now, while you're talking and reliving this, I'm going to be watching that voice stress meter to see what actually affects you. So I'll be making notes. Oh, well, Sola said that she saw the ship, and then the door came down or it hovered, and a light surrounded it, and all of a sudden I see it start spiking. You know, so I know this is bothering you, it's scaring you, it's working with you. It also allows me to help you to get through the hypnosis session easier with less fear, but it shows me where I should be concentrating on the line of questions when we come back. It also shows me, too, a lot of contactees will be telling you stuff and you'll be watching that meter flat. Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't affect them emotionally. That's an impossibility. Even if you're a long-term contactee and you've been dealing with this, and even if you're a keeper and been dealing with this your whole life, when certain things are talked about, you're going to stress. Whether it's a good or a bad, that meter is still going to register. Mm-hmm. And so if I see it go flatline the whole time, I usually will ask them to take a real voice stress analysis test with me to see if they're lying or telling the truth. Because it's one of those things. I've also got my license for a private investigator.
Nice.
So the thing of it is, and then on top
hired
of that.
Hired,
though. Yeah. Then on top of all of that, I'm very well versed in most all the sciences and did quite a lot of time. And then on top of that, I own the radio station, ICAR, and maintenance solutions.
Right.
So I'm very well rounded, very well on the circuit. I've been part of the Amateur Astronomy Society for 15 years. Oh, actually, I'm sorry. I've been 30 years. Yeah, 30 years. Damn.
Oh.
God. I started when I was 20, so, yeah, about 30 years, 32 years. I'm giving my age away. But anyway, so I've been part of that. We've been skywatching for a long time. We're the only one that ever set up parameters on how to use cameras. Come on, MUFON's a sighting organization. I work for the abduction organization. Why should I be telling you stuff like using an analog camera along with this digital? And then in one of the videos, MUFON's never done this, by the way. In one of the videos that was on the Sci-Fi channel, it's still posted to one of my Facebook pages even today. It's about a year old. You hear me talking. Okay. I step out of my car. I'm talking. I said, look, there's a dot in the sky out over the ocean. I've been watching for about 10 minutes. So I click on the camera so you can see where I'm standing. You see the beach, the water, the poles, the sky. So I zoom all the way in on it so you see this thing. It's split in half, whatever it is. So we know the cloud deck is at 5,000 feet because I checked the weather. That's where the cloud deck is. So this thing is sitting halfway between the cloud deck and the water, which means it's at around 2,500 feet. My camera is accurate to about 5 miles out on a good solid zoom, so which puts this craft at roughly about 3.5 miles out in the water. But more importantly, when I start to zoom back in, you'll hear me talking. Okay, we're coming back now. As you can see, it's starting to shrink. It's going back to a dot. We're coming back in. I said, now you can see the view of the ocean. You can see the island to the right and the casinos off to the left. So it starts to give you distance and size. As we come in even more, you can see the beach, the telephone poles, the cars, the skies. So now you have preference and something. Off to the right, when we come in a little further, there's a ship coming, you know, just a boat in the water. So you can actually tell the size. This thing was probably sitting at around 2,500 feet. It stayed there for 22 minutes. If the ship we seen was about half the size of the dot, it was a 160-foot steamer. So it was about half the size of the dot when we seen it. So that means this thing was at least 320 feet across, at least.
Wow.
And it's at 2,500 feet sitting still. So then I've got a thing called Airport Monitor 2. Anybody can get this if they have it for your airport. It gives you an accurate flight pattern for up to 1 year of everything flying within an 80-mile radius of your airport. So I click it on. It shows nothing in the area. So I said, to hell with this. I call up Keesler Air Force Base. I said, are y'all anything flying to some weird over the Gulf? Nothing's in the air. Call the CB base. Nothing's in the air. Call Gulfport International. Nothing's in the air. Mm-hmm. So now we've got confirmation from three airports and Airport Monitor that there's nothing flying in the air, but yet I'm sitting there watching this thing, videotaping it while I'm talking on the phone with these people. Matter of fact, Keesler actually sent out a helicopter about 5 minutes later. About 2 minutes after the thing disappeared, they sent one out there. And we've even got it on video headed out there. And that video is, like I said, it's still available on my Facebook page today. It's kind of eerie. It's kind of weird because, you know, I'm talking the whole time. You can see by just watching the counter on the thing how long I'm on the camera. Mm-hmm. And I'd already watched it for like 15 minutes before I got the camera. And the funny part was I didn't even stop for that. There was something my wife had seen on the left side coming down. It was just coming straight down in the woods. So I was going to try to stop and get a picture of that. And it disappeared behind the trees before I could get to it. So when I looked to the right, when I seen it, I said, what the hell is that? I started watching. I said, well, it's not moving. Maybe it's a star. So then I went and got the camera out and started looking. And next thing I know, here's this weird object hovering over the thing. And the funny part was the guy on I can't remember the damn sci-fi show. It's the one, Believe It or Not or something. Anyway, he goes, oh, he tells the girl, little cute girl, she says, oh, no, that's just car lights. So I wrote to the guy. I said, really, dude? It's at least 2 miles out in the Gulf of Mexico. How the hell is it car lights? Mm-hmm. I said, it's at least at 2,500 feet. I even explained to him what was going on. I said, the problem is you can't explain this case, so you don't want to touch this case. I said, I've always noticed y'all either debunk cases or cases that are really outrageous. I said, you don't want anything you can't explain away. I never did understand that. If you're going to do a TV show, do one where, you know, you're being legit.
Right. Well, don't you think that's the whole thing? It's they have to have a protocol insofar as not disclosing too much or maybe even playing stupid?
Well, you know, I've been threatened a few times over the years, and the government's basically told me the same thing. Look, when they came out on one of the job sites, I had 20-something guys out there, which was great because it was well-documented. They came out on a job site, and he basically told me, because I was on air the night before with Alfred Weber discussing alien agendas of all things. Mm-hmm. And they showed up on a job site, two guys in a white SUV with tinted windows, both wearing gray Armani suits, really nice suits, got out the thing and kept pointing at, we were putting on a new roof on a building on one of our properties we manage. And he kept pointing up there and doing his finger like, come here, come here. So I'm asking these guys, all right, because obviously they were feds. I'm like, come on, who's in trouble with the feds? I said, somebody not pay your tax? Did y'all do something, beat your wife? I said, did you kidnap something? You know, joking around because I knew all these guys. Mm-hmm. And they're like, Joe, I'm telling you, it ain't for us. And one guy said, Joe, I think he wants you. And so I looked at him, and I went like that, pointed at me, and I pointed back, and he shook his head. So I went down the ladder. About this time, the whole crew wants to come off the ladder, down the ladder with me. I'm like, no, y'all stay up here and stay working. Mm-hmm. And I said, I have no idea what this is, so just stay up here and stay working. So I walk over there. I get about 10, 15 feet. He unbuttons the one button on his jacket. He takes one finger and lifts that jacket up over his 45 so I could see his gun there. And he puts it back. And as I walk up, I said, what can I do for you? And he said, oh, I just want to tell you, we really like what you're doing, and we support what you're doing. We like that you're putting out the information in a constructive form that helps become more believable, blah, 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 blah. He said, but we don't want you talking about the alien agenda. And he said, then he looked at me and said, before you say anything, I just want to make this clear. He said, Joe, we know you're on the road a lot. You travel a lot. You're all over the place. He said, I also know your kid and your wife's home a lot by themselves. And so he was basically threatening my wife and my child, not me.
Right.
So to drive the point home, he said, you know, he said, you can talk about anything you want, just leave the alien agenda alone. So I said, okay. Well, a week goes by, I get a phone call. Out of the blue, I'm at work. So I put it on speakerphone because there was a bunch of people in the office with me. And he goes, I just wanted to let you know your wife's fine. She's at the doctor's office in her red skirt and her blouse, and she's driving the white car with the trooper plates on and blah, blah. I'm like, oh, shit. Tells me right where my kid is. I was like, you made your point, dude. I said, I'll leave the alien agenda alone. You made your point. Right. Now, I've been telling this story for a decade, but it was freaky. It was scary. And but he told me that I had people that watched what I did, followed what we did, and was happy what we did. We had people calling to wake up Hugh Fetz, because in the 16 years I've been doing radio until recently, you know, now we use digital, but before we were using phone lines. For 10 years of radio, I never had a show where the line wasn't open. There's a little red light on the box, on one of our boxes we use, on one hybrid boxes, that lets you know if there's an open line, which means someone's on the line with you. We'd have all our guests and ourselves, all of a sudden you'd see the light come on. There was somebody listening. It got to the point where we used to joke with them on air, tell them, we know you listen. Every now and then one would call into the show. You know, and just start talking with us. Oh, yeah, we were listening to la, 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 la. And it was just crazy. I've had them show up and deliver stuff to me. I've had them give me stuff, tell me stuff. I had Senator McDonald call me one time about a black triangle. We, before he passed away, we could never use his name. And because somebody said, well, you don't know. I said, no, I've been talking about this for 16 years or 18 years. I said, you can't say it was something we just made up. And what it was he had seen a black triangle driving home, and I think it was in Arizona, New Mexico. And somehow or another, he got my number. I don't even know why. I don't know why he didn't call MUFON or somebody. He just got my number, and he said, do you know anything about these black triangles? And he described it to me, an orb on each point, a glowing red orb. I said, yeah, they're TR-3Bs. I said, it's U.S. government. He said, no, it can't be U.S. government. I would know about it. This is a 25-year incumbent senator, serving on several boards, a couple of them military and top secret. He said, no, I would know. I said, well, apparently you don't. So I told him everything I knew, and I told him, I said, but I don't believe you. I think you're full of BS. I don't think you're who you say you are, right? Mm-hmm. And so about 2 days later, I get a knock on my door, and it's a FedEx package with this guy's driver's license and correct picture of his driver's license and congressional ID. Sure. I was like, okay, that's weird. So he called me again, asked me something. I said, dude, look. I said, you just got this off the internet or something. You know, you fake whatever. Because, I just didn't believe him.
Right.
And I was, you know, so anyway, long story short, a while passes by, I get a knock on my door. It's coincidental because everybody had just left the house. Wife was going on vacation. The kid was going to stay with some friends. Guy comes up to the door. He's really well-dressed. I look out this limousine. I'm like, wow, who are you? He said, would you come take a ride? I said, dude, I don't know who the hell you are. Why don't I take a ride with you? I'm thinking, get the hell out of here, man. He said, this is about that black triangle. And then I got really nervous and backed up away from the door. I was reaching back to see where my gun was. And he goes, no, it's Senator McDonald. I said, dude, get out of here. So I see the window go down. I'm looking at what it looks like. So I walk over. He starts talking. It's him. I get in the car. We're going for a couple of hours. We ride around. He hands me a vanilla envelope with all kind of information about the TR-3B. He said, read, get as much as you can. You got to give me it back. He said, but while we're in this car, you can read the whole thing. And he said, I want to thank you. He said, because I had no idea this project existed. He was lividly pissed. He said, I cannot believe the blankety, blankety, blankety friends of mine were keeping this a secret. And it was very interesting. It's a type of magnetic and gravity-built drive. It's kind of a combination. Mm-hmm. At the time, it was being powered by fusion, whichever one we use now, but they said they were getting ready to upgrade it to fission. I always get the two confused for some reason, but which is something Boeing said within 10 years we would have. For the military, within 20, you'd be able to power your house on it. So mm-hmm. That just tells you already. Anytime you hear the government say it's something we're working on, means we already have it. Remember right. the SR-71? Oh, we're working on it. Oh, no, it's been flying around since the 60s. What? It's still the fastest, stealthiest plane we've ever built, and we built it way back in the day. That's just confusing in itself. SR-71, I mean, not the SR-71, the X-117 stealth fighter. It didn't exist. Most people didn't realize it, but we started getting sightings in 1979. They didn't officially announce the plane was actually in operation until one of the Desert Wars. Wow. In the 90s. So that's how long it was a covert secret before they told us. And they only told us because they wanted to go fly it over there and they knew people were going to see it. Mm-hmm. So you know, after that, we knew they were working on projects like that, but we didn't know they were actually existing and it was more than one of them.
Right. And Joe, not to interrupt you, but I just want to, what year did the TR-3B come out then? What official year do you think it was?
What was it? I'd have to go look and see. It was, I want to say it was like 69 or when did the YouTube get shot down? I'd have to go see when the YouTube got shot down, but it wasn't long after that. And actually, the bad part is I usually know that. It's because, you know, they retired the fleet. NASA owns the SR-71 Blackbird fleet now. They belong to them. And that was another thing. Everybody already thought there was one of them. No, there was more. I think it was a dozen of them. I think there's still six of them in operation today. But it's like the X-35 spy plane that the Air Force is. I told everybody back in 95 that the Navy and the Air Force had their own space program. Oh, no, we got NASA. Now they know we have our own space programs. Both the Air Force and the Navy have separate, independent space programs of NASA. Mm-hmm. The Navy, you can't even get to talk about. The only reason we even know about the Air Force one because of that stupid plane they've been flying in space. Somebody got a picture of it, and they had to fess up that they had their own secret space shuttle flying in orbit that had been up there. When we found out about it, it was on its second mission, and it had been up there for a year on its second mission when we found out about it. Mm-hmm. It's very advanced. It's very fast. We know DARPA's building, tested that plane that did Mach 13. There's so much stuff going on that we don't know about that could be easily mistaken for aliens or UFOs or something like that. I think, right. I hate to say it, but I think in the Cash Landry case, I think it was something maybe half terrestrial, half ET, something we were working on because something about the radiation, you just don't hear about radiation contamination from contactees.
Mm-hmm.
You do hear about burns from sometimes skin discoloration, but not like Cash Landry and them got where it killed them and stuff. It was like melted the highway and stuff. And this thing was being followed by a whole herd of helicopters. It just sounded like a rogue government project that went rogue, probably something running on a nuclear reactor or something.
So it leaves more of a defined signature if it's ours?
Yeah, it does. It really does. The technology we use is, well, put it in perspective. When you hear most people describe a UFO, it sounds more like a doorway opening and closing. Oh, it was there, it was gone. Oh, it was there, it was gone. It's rare that you hear, oh, it was streaking across the sky, or it was doing this or the other thing. Usually it's there, then it's gone. It's there, then it's gone. Oh, I was watching it, whoop, it was gone. It looked like it started accelerating, whoop, it was gone. It just disappears. It's like a doorway opening and closing. Ours, one of the best cases we've got on a TR-3B was a young man at Pensacola Naval Air Station. Calls me up one night. We got one on radar. And they clocked at Mach 12.5 inside the atmosphere.
Wow.
That's fast. Now, it's not a record breaker, mind you, because the shuttle reentry is between Mach 25 and Mach 36, depending on how it comes in. So that's interesting in itself. Of course, it always cracks me up because science always said that if we ever went faster than Mach 5, we would mush together and become melted. And remember, in the old days, even Mach 1 was impossible to achieve. It was technologically impossible. Just like today, light speed is technologically impossible. We should never say something's impossible on this planet.
Right.
Eventually, we work it out or figure it out or something along those lines. But I like our planet. I like our species. I think we got a lot of work to do and a lot of stuff we got to take care of. And I can see why alien races would want to visit here. Humans got a lot to offer. We also got a lot of problems, but we do have a lot to offer. And what's really scary about all this is sometimes if you start going back, because we didn't really get into ancient history tonight, but if you go back a long time, just 6,000, well, we'll just say 6,000 years for the sake of argument, it seems like you've got the Sumerians. And right now there's an argument between the Sumerians and the Egyptians who had the first written language. They gave the Sumerians credit, but then they found the Zeros dynasty in Egypt, so they're thinking maybe it was them. But regardless who it was, both of them had some style of extraterrestrial contact. The Sumerians talk about a race that came here. They built two great white dome cities. Well, they were human looking. That was their words. They looked human. They thought they were angel deity kind of things. Mm-hmm. But they had to live inside the domes. Apparently, the atmosphere here was toxic. They said they created a race just like them to come out and, you know, get the resources on the planet. Somewhere along the line, that race decided, well, you know what, we're omnipotent too. We're just going to create another race, and it comes what they call Sumerians call the seven creations of man, where they were all human bodies, but they had different heads on them.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an eagle head, a dog head, or whatever head, And then in the end, there was humans that kind of looked like the humans today, but they were a little shorter, stockier, a little slightly different, but still human. That race came along, and then then you had them, and then they said they were kind of, and it's always funny because it kind of reminds me of the Adam and Eve story. They're just doing their job, you know, plowing the fields, procreating, digging the minerals, giving the stuff to the aliens. They're supposed to not saying anything. All of a sudden, stage right, here comes the reptilians. Reptilians start raping, stealing and raping their women. This is the Sumerians quote, stealing and raping their women. The children that were born different. When I originally heard this some 25 years ago, I thought they meant they were deformed. That's not what they meant. They were different. They thought differently. Somewhere along the line, that group is the one that got rid of whoever was living on the planet with the help of probably the reptilians. But the reptilians interbred with them and gave them self-awareness. What's really funny about this is every human on the planet has a reptilian section in their brain, every one. Beyond, you can't escape it, every human today on this planet has a reptilian section in their brain. It's just coincidentally that the story was that the reptilians came in and took their women, and the children were born different. They were smarter, faster, brighter, and wanted to know why they had to plow the field. Mm-hmm. And I think what really happened was, is they wanted the people, they wanted the humans to leave. The humans really couldn't attack them because they did have reptilian DNA. So that would be starting a war with the reptilians, which I think they wanted to kind of stay away from. Mm-hmm. So here, and this is what's so funny about this. If you do your homework, you'll find out that only the human aliens and only the reptilian aliens were mentioned in the first early days of written history. The Greys don't get mentioned till after the time of Christ.
Very interesting.
Now, they are being mentioned in hieroglyphs in Egyptian tombs, but right around the time of Christ, which were about 3,000, 2,500 years ago, is when they showed up in these Egyptian tombs. They were showing these little Greys showing up, you know, just showing up in the pictures. What bothers me about that is if you look at the pharaohs, they all had that weird disease with the long head.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually a human head. Not a human like us head, but the human aliens are actually, their heads are longer than ours are. They're a little wider and they're deeper than mm-hmm. ours are. It's the same description, almost identical to what they describe for the pharaohs. So anyway, here comes the Greys. So it looks like in the early days we had human DNA intermingled with us, and then gray DNA intermingled with us. Mm-hmm. So anyway it goes, we're not a native species to this planet. Somewhere along the line, the Greys got involved and started interested in our DNA. So there are humans on this planet that have a mix of whatever they started out with, plus the gray reptilian and human DNA.
Right.
I would think for these three alien races, one of the reasons they keep such a close eye on us is sooner or later we will surpass them because they gave us the ability to. It'll be a billion years down the line, mind you, but eventually we will surpass them. Just like the Greys are more powerful than reptilians and humans, eventually one day we'll surpass even their mental abilities. And I think it bothers them a little bit because we are kind of a violent race.
Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine us today with, say, the reptilian or say the Greys technology and mental facilities? We'd wipe the universe out. There'd be no stopping us. They'd have to call the light beams in just to slow us down.
Death Star comes to mind.
That's right. I mean, it's just, you know, we're a great race, but we're still children, and we need to keep that in the back of our heads.
Right.
But it's all important information because it shows a timeline. It shows a progression. And then there's what they call the map of the creator, which is it's in Russia in one of the museums. You can look it up on the Pravda website, one of the Russian newspapers. This map dates back 120 million years. It's been dated by several different scientists, so there's no argument on how old this thing is. It's not just that. It's an aerial resource map of a valley, so it was taken from an aerial view 120 million years ago,
mm-hmm.
and it was showing resources in a valley. Okay, let's see. The Wright brothers was the first plane to fly. We had air balloons, 100 years before that, but really anything flying in the sky more than 300 years ago doesn't belong there.
Right.
And you'll be amazed at how many UFO sightings there are going from 300 years back. I mean, the Middle Ages was loaded with them, and it's all in the artwork and shows up all up in the religious texts. It's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to have been much more open with us before we became technologically advanced.
I agree. What about the soul being an alien species? Wouldn't you say the soul is an alien life form to begin with, so not necessarily indigenous?
Well, here's some other weird stuff for you.
Mm-hmm.
The average you know, we all have a biological clock, right? Earth, by the way, is set at 23 and 3/4 hours. The human biological clock is set at 24 and a quarter hours. There's only one planet in the solar system that has a 24 and a quarter hour day. That's Mars. More importantly than that, the optimal body temperature for humans is 10 degrees cooler than the planet we live on today. Mars at its height would have been 10 degrees cooler than Earth is today. So we may actually, one of these races may have spent some time there, or we may actually have some ties to someone who's there. There's no argument about that. We know a bunch of debris from Mars came to Earth. We know that already. We know that when Mount Olympus erupted, it dumped tons of matter on the planet. What was in it or how was in it, we don't know. But some people seem to think that maybe the reptilians started out there and then came to Earth when Mars went pluey, because it would have been perfect timing. Here's a reptilian on Mars. Mars would have developed much faster than Earth did because it was further out. It cooled faster, it congealed faster. Everything would have been faster there. They found themselves going extinct, so, hey, look, you know, they come to Earth. It's in the Jurassic period. It's a perfect time for a reptilian race to migrate to Earth. They couldn't ask for a better time. What's funny about that is the reptilians, when you ask them, say they're from Earth. But they must have disappeared for a long time because the humans came here and started mining the planet and were here for a long time. So, you know, so a lot of people seem to think that some of them went underground and went to sleep. A lot of them went out and colonized the stars, places like the Draco constellation and other constellations. They actually colonized. And now they came back. They found the humans. They didn't want to get into another war, so that's why they started interjecting their DNA to the others. The Greys came along probably to be policemen to keep these two idiots from getting into fights. Mm-hmm. Sooner or later, the human aliens and the reptilians were going to get into it over this species or the planet. So I think whoever's in control just said, hey, look, you the Greys, you the policemen, go over there and make sure this doesn't happen. Let them do this stuff because they've been here for how many thousands of years, but make sure, you know, X and X don't turn into Y or something. So, and it really does seem to be where they are, because people used to always tell me, oh, no, the Greys work for the reptilians, the Greys work for the humans. I would have believed that. If I wouldn't have known that, first off, there were 7-foot grays and even a 9-foot version of the gray. Mm-hmm. And the grays come in three different colors that we know of. None of them are actually gray. You've got what I would consider like a cobalt blue, a white, and a brown, and every shade in between. And the reason why is one of the things they use for food is it's a blue plasma, and they absorb it through their skin. So when they do, when they first feed, they're like this brilliant blue. As it drains from their system, the colors change. Sometimes they'll even get to almost like a white translucent color, mm-hmm. Kind of a ghosty kind of color. But it also matters what the base color is for the alien, whether it's a blue, a white, or a brown. But still, it changes the color when they feed, going and coming. So it's one of the reasons why we got kind of confused in the early days about, there's an awful lot of shades of gray here.
Right. No pun intended, right?
Yeah, no pun intended.
What about the energy? I mean, they strike me as energy creatures. In other words, they're absorbing what, prana? Is it energy they're absorbing?
Well, they're talking about the light beings. And one of the things we do is we pre-program contactees to ask questions. In other words, we'll take like 50 contactees that we know are being regularly abducted and say, hey, ask the Greys this. What's funny about this, most of the time none of the aliens really mind asking questions. Sometimes it makes them mad, though. And sometimes it can be repercussions for the wrong questions. But for the most part, they answer without thinking about it because they're telepathic. They pick you up. You're thinking about the question. When they pick you up, it goes in their head. The Grey answers you without thinking, as long as it's not considered something dangerous to us or classified, I guess. They let you keep the memory. In this case, all the Greys and even the reptilians said the same thing, that they are light beings that came from another galaxy, found this galaxy in a chaotic and crazy couple of 100,000-year war and came and took the Greys and created them to the Greys into the race the other day and made them the galactic policemen and said, we're not going to have this kind of shit anymore. Mm-hmm. And they just went out there. And what proved the point was, almost every time you hear of a contactee when there's Greys present, if a human or a reptilian shows up, they almost always bow their head and step back, even to the little 3-foot Greys.
Sure.
So it tells you they scare them.
Interesting.
That's just showing serious respect for a little 3-foot guy. But, you know, I've seen what they can do to humans, and you know, their heads are twice the size of the reptilians and humans, so you know their mental facilities are at least that. They have ships that are organic-based that grow their cells and can eat and reproduce food and create the blue plasma that the Greys eat, because it's – they say the blue plasma itself is alive, so it can be reproduced on board the ship. The ship uses it as fuel. Aliens use it as food. That's just not something the reptilians or the humans have. Yet reptilians and humans still use what I call physical technologies. Mm-hmm. Buttons, switches. A lot of their technology is telepathic. But the Greys don't even – it's not even telepathy. They become part of the damn ship.
Right, symbiotic, yeah?
Yeah, it's like they plug themselves into it. Mm-hmm. And the Grey ship, you know, when you go into one of their rooms, they're oval rooms. The floors, the ceiling, everything meets together. And when the Grey thinks of something, then these tables will grow up out of the floor and meld around the body and completely encapsulate the body. Anything, any instrument they need, all of a sudden there's a little hole opens up in the wall and you can watch the thing. It kind of starts to grow and come out. So it's producing whatever it needs at the moment. So this is very advanced technology, much more so than what the reptilians and the Greys do.
Right.
And if they were servants or something along that, the reptilians and humans would have ran the Greys off a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And something else we found out, and people get mad at me at ICAR sometimes because I will change data. And this is one of the ones they got a little mad at. In the early days, we used to think they abducted a third, a third, and a third. A third reptilians, a third humans, a third Greys. Well, about 10 years ago, we instituted the Grey reptilian human questionnaires for contactees. I think it's the Grey one's got to be 13,000 plus now, 14,000 plus people have taken the questionnaire. The human and the Greys and I mean the reptilians and humans are probably around a third of that. So what we found out by mass, the Greys abduct way more than the other two do. So it's more like 70% Grey abduction and 15% or maybe 20% on the other two abductions.
Interesting.
So that was very interesting to learn. That really changed the overall view of how we looked at this. We were like, well, wait a minute. Now, originally, these two were doing everything, and here comes the Greys, and they seem to have taken over and say, yeah, we're going to let you have this much room and this much, but that's it. You can't go any further than that. Mm. And they have not just with you know, I had said earlier, but them Greys coming and getting you from Millabs, they will come take you from other aliens. We've had a couple of accounts where, well, like, let's say you marry somebody, and he's a or I said he or she, you never know. Let's just say that they're being abducted by the Greys and you're being abducted by the reptilians. Well, you have a child. Who gets the rights to that child? Which alien race is going to get to abduct them? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think sometimes the Greys come in and say, no, Mr. Reppy, you're not taking him. We're going to take him. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Just how it is, you know, just how it is. And every now and then we get what I call crossover abductions where a race will give up a contactee to another alien species. Just doesn't make any sense. Mm. And then we get the ones where we call them handoffs. One of the most famous handoffs is Travis Walton. I've talked to Travis about this too. A handoff is, and you know these cases because there's usually quite a lot of missing time involved. Maybe not as much now, but I'll get into that in a minute. But in Travis's case, he was picked up. One of the things that scared Travis is I asked him one day on the air, I said, you didn't think they knew you were coming, Travis? He said, what do you mean? I said, first off, they're telepathic, so they knew you were coming. But more importantly, I said, you're in a big, noisy, squeaky truck with lights bouncing up and down the side of a mountain. I said, you don't think they didn't see the lights coming up and down the road? I said, they knew you were coming. Any way you want to look at this, they waited for you, Travis. They knew you were coming. Mm-hmm. I said, they didn't take anybody in the truck. They only took you. And I said, more importantly than that, I said, when you describe the ship, you describe the ship like a Grey ship, and you describe being in this area and then walking out. And I said, when you got out, you said you were in a hangar with human-type craft in it, and you said there was two people in white suits with helmets on that were talking English to you and using their mouth. So I asked him to describe the suits. They are typical C2C suits. So more than likely what happened is he was on board this craft for however long. They landed this craft in a hangar. The aliens at that point handed him off to the Millab people.
Mm.
They're the ones that dropped him off. And when he was telling me about it, it made total sense. I mean, he's describing these two humans, and I said, are they talking to you? Tell me. He said, no, they're talking to me. I said, well, describe them to me, because, you know, humans don't look that close to human aliens. I mean, we do, but we don't. Just the eyes are different, the face, they're just bigger all the way around than us to start off with. Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't have been wearing suits. That's somebody's fear of contamination. I've never heard of a human Grey or a reptilian wearing a suit.
Mm-hmm.
Of any kind, except in the early days, they talked about humans wearing these breathing apparatus, but even then they weren't wearing suits. So here you go. The only people I know that would wear a suit is the Center for Disease Control or anybody that's in a contaminated environment. They were there. There was alien craft there. They came to pick this guy up. This was in 76. and see what they could find out. And then when they got their information, they deposited him back on the road, and that was the end of it. Mm-hmm. And see, but no one stops to think why aliens would do something in this field. They just jump on a case, and that's it.
Right.
There's no explanation for it. I mean, come on. They don't just randomly take you for no damn reason. Mm-hmm. And as far as I know, there's no such thing as a one-time abductee. I've never hypnotized Travis, so I can't speak for him, but there's been several others that said they had one-time abductees, and then when hypnotized, turns out to be something entirely different. It's just something they don't do. There's no real need for it. And they probably knew Travis was on that mountain, and they were probably just sitting there waiting for him, saying, oh, Travis will be down in a few minutes, and then we'll zap him.
Wow. It's incredible. And you know what? We're almost out of time here. I can't believe it. What an incredible show it's been with you, Joe. I just love having you on. We're going to have you back over here again.
Well, you know, I love to come on and chat. This is easy stuff.
You are just the bomb. You are the best. I love it. And also, I want to thank you so much for being with us, and I know everybody's appreciated having you on tonight as well. I do want to thank everybody for tuning in as well, and please stay tuned for Dr. J Live coming up next on the Dark Matter Radio Network, of course. And we have just a little bit of time left here, plus or minus. Joe, anything you want to leave us with? Anything that you'd like to
our listeners? No, I just appreciate being on. Guys, y'all can find me. Just type in my name, Joe Mantell. That's the easiest way to find what I'm doing, what I'm up to, and who I'm affiliated with. Go by, check out the Facebook pages, check out some of the contact information. I know I had seen some people earlier the other day, so you know, if you're interested in the Travis Walton or the Benny Barney Hill stuff, we get into great detail and that much more than we got into tonight on why we get it. Matter of fact, you can go listen to that interview with Travis Walton I did about this particular case. He got really freaked out. He told me, he said, no one's ever asked me any of these questions before. I told him when I met him, I said, Travis, this is not going to be a typical interview. I'm going to ask you stuff that you've never been asked. Oh, no, that's impossible. And he's like, damn, you asked me all kinds of things I never thought it would be asked.
Isn't it nice when you know what to ask? I think that's the biggest thing. You know how to interview people. You have the experience in the background for that. So you know what questions.
But it does get me in trouble, too, because, you know, sometimes somebody will be telling me some BS, and I'm thinking, okay, because, you know, you can't rule out anything, ladies. Remember, always keep an open mind, including myself, always keep an open mind, because sometimes things look funny and stupid, but they might actually be real.
Exactly.
So you got to look into everything, and like some of the cases we have in other aliens, we just put on a sign.
We're out of time here, Joe. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Keith. Thank you, everybody. Have a great week.